Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, country, and one nation under God. Today is Monday, January 22nd, 2024. Lots of stuff going on, but we're going to have a great show tonight. We're going to have an in-depth discussion with a candidate for Florida House District 26, Mike Levine. He's going to be speaking to us in just a couple of minutes. But before we do that, we will go do as we usually do, start with the American Creed. And everybody should know what this is and appreciate it. I believe in the United States of America as a government of the people, by the people, for the people, whose just powers are derived from the consent of the governed, a democracy and a republic, a sovereign nation of many sovereign states, a perfect union, one and inseparable, established upon the principles of freedom, equality, justice, and humanity, for which American patriots sacrifice their lives and fortunes. I therefore believe it is my duty to my country to love it, to support its constitution, to obey its laws, to respect its flag, and to defend it against all enemies. William Tyler Page. Those, to me, are words to live by. And then I have this other thing that I am faced or forced to live by because it's the truth. And that is, I love my country. It's my government I am afraid of. And if you're not afraid of what this government's doing out there, I don't know what to tell you, because there's definitely a few things to be afraid of. But before we get to go to Mike and get into why he's running for office and what he's going to do to help us here in Florida, just a quick update, a couple of few things here. For those of you who didn't hear, Ron DeSantis, Governor Ron DeSantis, has withdrawn from his presidential race, and he is now endorsing Trump. He did that, I guess, yesterday afternoon. And for those of us who live in Florida, it's like, wow, we get to have a governor again. Many of us were annoyed that he was doing this anyway, and we were really more annoyed that he changed Florida law. He himself didn't, but I'm sure he had some influence on the legislature who went and changed the law that allowed him to keep his job while he ran for office. Because if they hadn't changed the law, right now he would be unemployed. And there was a reason why the law was made that way, because you cannot do both. You can't run for president and be the governor of the state of Florida. So I'm hoping that the next legislature will go back and reverse that and get it back to where it was and where it should have been. So we might get to talk to Mike about that. The other, which was really disgusting to me, SCOTUS, the Supreme Court, decided in favor of the Border Patrol cutting the Texas razor wire that they put there because the Border Patrol, thanks to Biden and company, are not doing anything to stop the illegals. So Texas was taking action to defend and protect its home, its state, but that's not legal, I guess, or whatever. So we can hope that maybe something will happen on that one. We deep down, we know it's not the Border Patrol that doesn't want to do this. We know it's the insanity of what's happening at the federal level. And I've mentioned this a couple of times. I'm trying to get somebody out there in the media to talk about it, but that's another story. I need to talk about the fact that Biden signed us on to, with the United Nations, the Global Compact on Immigration. And this was a global compact to say, yes, people can travel wherever they want to, and we're going to do what we can to help them, the refugees. So where is everybody coming? Now, there's probably a few traveling to some other countries around the world, whatever. But I think if you look at this so-called refugee program, this compact on immigration, the majority of them are coming here to the United States of America, where the rest of us who actually work for a living are supposed to support them. It's so insane. But you can't get anybody out there in the media or in Congress to talk about this global compact they signed into. United Nations is controlling our immigration instead of us. It's just insane. Absolutely insane. Okay, and the other, I think most of you heard last week, the natural assets companies, the SEC, it's been withdrawn. They were trying to get them out there on the SEC, get approve them, but that has been withdrawn. But we all know they're not going to give up easily, so keep your eye open on that one. The Uniparty, our good old friends. So glad we have a Republican Congress, you know. So good for us. Went ahead and passed this CR again with the help of Johnson. More Democrats voted for it than Republicans. And, of course, there's nothing to do with border security in it. So this is, we got to get rid of these rhino uniparties, whatever you want to call it, the anti-American so-called Republicans out there. They're disgusting. But this is what they're doing. And all I can say is I guess Michael Johnson was trained really good by Kevin McCarthy, doing just like Kevin was doing. The other thing, Florida House Bill 901. This is something that just came up to ban the pride flags on government and school and government buildings. This was already supposed to be out there. There shouldn't truly have to be this out there. It was already, my understanding, you weren't allowed to be promoting other groups, whatever, on the buildings. But after the Pulse Place had the accident a few years back in Orange County, I know personally because they put the pride flag on the county building. They wouldn't put the Christian flag there, but they'd put the pride flag there. So there is actually a House bill out there that's going to be banning that. And but I think it was Tom Pastore who was out there saying something. It doesn't include banning the painting Black Lives Matter on the roads and all this other stuff. It needs to include that as well. We shouldn't be using public space for political groups and whatever else. And let's see. The WHO, interestingly enough, they want us all to sign. I want the countries to sign the agreement before Disease X comes out. WHO, the World Health Organization, wants to take over all of our rights, wants to demand, have total control over giving us the jab like so many people unfortunately did with this COVID-19 stuff. And we've got to reject that. That's another one. And let's see here. There's a bill out there. It was actually out there back in 22, and looks like they're representing it. So I'm not going to say anything about the House number on it just yet. But the whole idea is to defund the World Economic Forum. It's amazing. We give millions and millions and millions of dollars for these people to go over there and say why they want to destroy America and why they have all their private jets and all they're polluting everything while they're telling us not, while they're telling us to eat crickets while they eat steak kind of thing. And saying, so I would encourage everybody to contact their representatives and say, yes, we do need to defund the World Economic Forum. They're not there for us. We need to shut that down as much as we can. And a similar thing on shutting down or defunding NATO. Apparently, there's been a bill just recently passed, I think it was passed in December, that will block any president from withdrawing from NATO without congressional approval. This seems to be one of the actions they're doing, an attempt to make sure that if Trump gets reelected, that he can't do anything. They're going to try to take away as many powers. Of course, they're going to let Biden up there do whatever he wants to do, even though he has no clue what he's doing. They don't seem to care what he does, but they're going to try to stop Trump from doing things. That's sort of where it's going. So since they put a bill out there to block any president from leaving NATO, the House is apparently doing some stuff to defund it. So we're going to talk more about that on another show. And then the good news is that 2024, this was reported by Glenn Beck last week, this year, worldwide, there are more elections than any time in whatever so many years. And this is really good because we're not the only ones who are annoyed with what's going on. At times, I don't think we do enough. It seems like other countries are actually more aggressive in protesting the outrageous communist takeover, Marxism, and everything else going on with their countries. But they're out there, the tractors in the streets, the trucks in Canada, and all these other things, protesting what's happening. But this, because there's so many elections this year worldwide, it looks like the people are actually saying, wait a minute, we don't want this. And the people are pushing back. So it's a good thing. I just hope we can do enough, especially right here on this homeland. And then one last thing real quick. If you get a chance, consider boycotting the NFL Super Bowl thing. Once again, the NFL is doing their political stuff where they're going to be having the black national anthem and the kneeling and all the other nonsense of what they've done, and totally destroying the whole reason why the national anthem was played in the beginning and why it was to respect and honor the troops, those who lost their lives, those who served. So they totally demeaning it while they're acting like these people are oppressed. There's plenty of blacks and other colors in the NFL. They seem to make a lot of money from what I see. I don't know any of these NFL players that are broke. I know many of them have multi-million dollar contracts. How are they oppressed? What are they kneeling for? And how much of their money have they given away to their community that they say they care so much about? It's all so crazy. But the whole point is we did this a while back, and Tom Pastore is getting his emails out there reminding people we need to send the message to the NFL again. Stop with the insanity. Try being an American. You know, that's what it is. It's an American sport. Try being Americans for a change instead of the other. So with that being said, that'll be my quick update for tonight. And now we're going to get Mike on here. And let's see here. And Mike, can you hear me? Can I hear you?
Sally, I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yep, I can.
Right.
Mike Levine, candidate for District 26, Florida State House. Welcome to the show. And
well, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, thank you. As we know, there's many, many issues and topics out there to talk about. You and I have gone over somewhat of a hit list. You know the issues that people are concerned about: immigration, the economy, the central bank, digital currency, ESG, solar energy. I mean, all these different things that are all a concern to all Americans. We're being harmed by it, and et cetera, et cetera. But you're running for the House. I'm going to just ask you to let everybody know why you're running. I do have your website posted on the show page, but we'll make sure everybody has that too. Why you decided to run for office, your background. Yeah, I know you've got an extensive background in real estate, and you've been very active in the Republican Party. So you can tell us a little bit about yourself, and then tell us what you want to do, what your goals are, why you think it's important that you run for office. And I guess the one thing I would ask you to do as we talk about these topics, sort of distinguish states' rights from the federal. As a state representative, what can you do? What should states be doing, their 10th Amendment rights, to reject the insanity of what is happening in D.C. and what you want to do, you know, at the state level type thing? So I know I just said a mouthful, but with that being said, please tell us about yourself and answer as many questions.
Sure.
When you're ready to start taking questions, let me know, and then we'll go that way too.
Okay, sounds good. You know, it's interesting. When I was a kid, the objective was always that the best thing you could possibly do was own your own business. So that's basically what I set out to do. So, you know, I grew up in Orlando. I went to Colonial High School. And then I was very fortunate and had an opportunity to go to Florida State University. I got a bachelor's degree in business and specializing in hotel and restaurant administration, hospitality kind of stuff. And I ran hotels for a decade. I decided to get it. Well, basically, I had a conversation with my boss and said, you know, boss, I sold 5 hotels for them as a general manager, on-site general manager. And I just one day, my boss and I were having a discussion about business and things like that. And I said, you know, boss, I think we're in the real estate business, to which, of course, we were. Hotels are income properties, right? So, you know, that's the perspective that to this day, carry into my life. And when, so just to kind of encapsulate that thought, when you look at government, it's completely different than running a business, okay? Government just doesn't look at the administration of the government like a business person would. And I think I can make this point crystal clear by just comparing the CR that we're talking about right now in Washington, D.C., compared to setting up a budget, you know, for an upcoming year in your business. So in my business as a real estate broker and a property manager for many, many years, and when I was working in the hotel business as well, we had a program called zero-based budgeting. And what that meant was is every month we would go through our bank statements and we'd look at all the bills that we paid, and we ask the question, do we really need this? Is this something that we can do without? Can we do it better? Can we do it cheaper, et cetera? But government never has that conversation. So if you look at the continuing resolution that's going on in Washington right now, really what they're saying is that they're going to just carte blanche extend last year's budget numbers with some kind of typically with an inflationary adjustment, a 2 or 3%, you know, consumer price index related increase in what it costs to do business. But isn't it interesting that they never actually go through their budgets and their operating statements and say, do we really need this anymore? Because as you know, once something gets into the budget, it never goes away. Can you agree with me on that?
Yes. Most definitely.
That's my point. I mean, honestly, this is – so, you know, I got out of the hotel business. I got into the real estate brokerage business. And then I started, you know, I wanted to be the best possible real estate broker I could be. And then, you know, the Florida Association of Realtors and the National Association of Realtors provided excellent training programs and stuff like that. So I got involved with all that. And eventually I wound up being the president of the Osceola County Association of Realtors in 1999. In 2008, I was the president of the Central Florida Commercial Association of Realtors. And even at the association level, it was just interesting that, you know, the budgets certainly were not zero-based budgeting, okay? But I will give the Florida Realtors credit that they have a pretty sharp pencil, you know, when they're managing their budgets and stuff. But, you know, when you get into it, you know, government just seems to let me just encapsulate by saying they have no respect for taxpayers' money, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it is. That's really what
yep.
it is. So, once I decided to get into the Republican – well, actually, what happened was I moved from Osceola County to Lake County, and I knew that the contacts that I had in Osceola County weren't interested in me anymore because I couldn't vote for them. So I went down to the Republican Executive Committee in Lake County in 2010, and I started getting involved there. And, of course, the Tea Party cropped up in 2010. And, you know, 1 month we had about 30 new members, and they were all Tea Party members, and the establishment members of the Republican Executive Committee didn't like that very much. So they, you know, there became quite a divide, which you're still seeing it today. I mean, today it's even worse probably than it was then because it's just evolved. And today we refer to it as the Uniparty because back in 2010 there was at least an inclination that all Republicans were conservative. And you can get into the definition of what is a conservative, but if you look at it, for me personally, I just look at it from a fiscal standpoint. And that we want to keep government financially small. We want, we just like Ronald Reagan said, you know, as government gets bigger, liberty gets smaller. So that's absolutely true. And you can get into the economics of the whole situation. Government takes money out of the economy and thereby shrinks the amount of money available in the private sector of the economy for discretionary spending and reinvestment and that kind of thing. So the fact of the matter is that a lot of people who are Republicans actually make a living off the government. I'll just say that today, if you Google how much money, you know, how much of gross domestic product does the federal government consume, you can say, you know, you'll find out pretty quick that the federal government consumes about 38% of America's entire GDP. And remember that the federal government is not the only government agency. We still have state governments. We still have county governments. We still have municipal governments, cities that also consume services as well. So it's, I mean, it's government as a whole consumes, I would suggest, significantly more than 50% of the entire gross domestic product of the United States of America.
Disgusting.
So from a business perspective, what does that mean? As a business guy, or, you know, you would, you just have to realize that the government is your best customer. Can you agree with that, Sally?
Unfortunately, yes. Yep.
I mean, that's just what it is. I mean, if you're trying to make money and you're setting up marketing plans and business plans and budgets, you just all of a sudden realize that when government consumes over 50% of the GDP, well, then who is your best customer? It's obviously the government. So business people target the government for contracts because they're the biggest purchaser of most of everything we produce and everything we sell. And of course, government agencies are spending other people's money. So they're a little, you know, they're not as price resistant, right? If you and I want to go out and buy a car, I was just looking at some expenditures here in Lake County about, you know, cities buying police cars and counties buying police cars and stuff like that. And you take a look at it and say, well, what would you be willing to pay? And, of course, police cars have, you know, a lot of equipment on them that typical cars don't have, and I'm not making a direct correlation between the price of a family vehicle and the price of a squad car. But it's just saying that because the government could just simply tax you more in order to pay for the car, they're not as concerned about how much cars cost. Do you follow me?
Exactly. Which actually, and close to you is Orange County. I think is just well, I guess with the help of Darren Soto. Yeah, a representative, and then someone else I can't remember at the state level are out there working on getting electrical buses for Orange County.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. Don't get me started. Mm-hmm. We can talk about that when we get around to it. You know, but the point of the matter is I've actually decided, and there's so much more. This is such a, again, you know, you just don't eat the whole elephant in one bite, right? But it's just, I'm just going to cap it off by saying that, especially today with all we're seeing from the national, from the federal level, and then you get into the state and the cities and the counties and stuff. You know, government is really contemptuous towards the citizens. And when you question, like, for I will tell you that in 2010, when I started getting involved in government here in Lake County, you know, we made a little bit of noise about, you know, the constitutional officers doing budget presentations to the public and inviting people in and to show you how they spent your money and to demonstrate that they were good stewards of our money. And today that just doesn't happen at all. So
yeah.
If you ask a constitutional officer or even the Board of County Commissioners who do a better job, I will say, I mean, the county commissioners have budget workshops and things like that that are open to the public and that kind of thing. So I give the commissioners a little more credit than the constitutional officers. But back in 2010, the constitutional officers actually had a little smidgen of a sense of responsibility to demonstrate to taxpayers that they were good stewards of their money. But that hasn't happened here in Lake County in a long time. So the constitutional officers would probably tell you, well, we have these workshops and nobody shows up. Yeah, you have them on Tuesday mornings at 9 o'clock in the morning when everybody's working. And granted, there's a lot of apathy and stuff like that. But today, there's also a lot of ways to do it, right? There's a lot of ways to present, you know, your budgets and your operating statements and things like that, where people could, if they wanted to, they could go online, or you could post YouTube videos, and so many ways to do it, you know, to demonstrate to taxpayers that you do care about the way their money is spent and that you pay homage to being a good steward of taxpayer money. And Sally, you can, I know you're going to agree with me that this is ridiculous. Honestly, when I go to the Florida House, I would love to think that managing the budget would be my number one concern. But with all the ridiculousness going on in the world right now, we don't even talk about managing the budget. Can you relate to that?
I can definitely relate to it. And going back to the problem with our elections, which I know we're going to get into later, what is the priority, the elections or the budget? To me, they're both. They both need to be taken care of. It's not, you got to do them both.
Which is so interesting, right? And let me just delve into that a little bit. And I've been to Tallahassee. I was in Tallahassee. Senator Dennis Baxley invited me to Tallahassee when committee weeks were going on. And, of course, you know, Senator Baxley served 27 years in the Florida legislature. And he is the Senate pro tem, so he's right there next to the president of the Senate. I've had a decent relationship with Senator Baxley over the years. So when he was on the phone, I talked to him on the phone about an hour and a half when I first got into the race. And he was, you know, he kindly invited me to come and spend the day with him in Tallahassee. So I went. And it's so interesting when you talk to legislators, it's kind of surprising that they at least tell you that they're uninformed about so many of these things. Election integrity would be a good example of it. But it's so, and you know, you and I believe are on a Defend Florida call. I think that's how I got on your radar was when I was on, you and I were both on a Defend Florida call. And at the end of the two-hour call, I just made the statement that said, hey, ladies and gentlemen, while it's good to be statesmen, it most certainly is, and we need to be polite as much as we can, don't think that enlightening these guys is going to solve the problem. But when you go and talk to them in their offices and things like that, they'll basically allow you to believe that you're educating them and they don't really know what's going on. But I've challenged that theory. I think they totally know what's going on. They know more about it than we do, and especially when it comes to election integrity. If a legislator does not know as much about what's going on in the budget or election integrity or as it relates to the use of government buildings or whatever the situation is, I'm suggesting to you they shouldn't be a legislator. You know, they stepped up, all of us, and of course I've never served in public office before, but when I take the oath and become a member of the Florida House of Representatives, I make a commitment to voters that I will do my very best to stay informed about the most pertinent issues affecting our state and our nation and our municipalities and our counties and things like that. I mean, that's my responsibility. I've asked you for a very prestigious job, and when voters vote for me, I have a responsibility to them to do the job. So the idea that legislators don't have any information, they're ignorant about what's going on, if either that's not true or they shouldn't be legislators anymore. So, you know, that's a big deal. Legislators have a responsibility to voters and taxpayers to be informed about what's going on. And I'll just turn the floor back over to you for a second and see if what your thoughts are.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and when it comes to there's some of these things, and it's at the local level as well, it's really scary. As I go to different meet and greets with, and this can be federal representatives as well as state people running at the state level and things, and you realize, wait a minute, why are you truly running? Because you don't seem to have any clue about some of the most obvious and well-known issues of what's going on right now. And I mean, there was the recent bill that was changed that actually took away, gave rights to developers. I think you and I talked about this. Gave eminent domain rights to developers over local governments on what their local planning is. And first off, that's terrible. The local planning, the local county commissions, and these are the people, local government should control local government, I mean, local thing, issues. And they did this, and when you go and you talk to your county commissioners, and they don't even know this happened. They're changing laws that are taking away their powers, their control over their community, and they don't even know it. And then, of course, most of them didn't know anything about the NAC thing. Most of them don't know what CBDC is. I mean, it's very disgusting when these people and the solar, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's just, I feel like I need to go up there and train them on the basics. Do you know what Agenda 21 is? Have you heard of that? Do you know what the Great Reset, what the World Economic Forum's do? I mean, they just seem to be so clueless. And I'm like, but you're supposed to represent me, and you don't seem to be aware of what's going on. It's pretty scary to me.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Sally, we can, you know, my concern is, like, here we are, you and I and the audience here, talking about this, and we can bloviate about this all day long, and absolutely it's a waste of time. For, you know, because everything that we say, of course, this is being recorded and all that stuff, so that's a good news. But as I, you shared part of this little proclamation that I wrote and some of the things that I've written over the last couple of years, and there comes to a point where I just say that things that are written down come to pass. So, you know, we can sit here and talk about this all day long, but the truth is, or at least my perception of it is, that oftentimes the elected officials, they live in such a bubble that their little world is honky-dory. And as long as they're happy, they assume everybody's happy and that everything's going great for everybody like it is for them. But that just isn't the case. So where is the incentive for city councilmen, county commissioners, and even state reps and, of course, federal elected officials to stay current on what's going on? So, for example, let's just, you know, election integrity is just glaring, Sally. Every time I talk to voters, there's absolutely no way to have a conversation with a voter and not talk about election integrity. Everyone is furious about it. So here's the question, okay? And I'm just going to broaden it a little bit too. So the first point would be that we have 67 supervisors of elections in the state of Florida. They know, I'm going to say that 70% of Floridians are hair on fire about the elections processes, yet they don't step up and explain it to us. Why is it a good idea for 67 out of 67 supervisors of elections in the state of Florida to outsource the management of their voter rolls to VR systems? And, you know, and I'll be honest, I went to a Chamber of Commerce meeting when I first got in the race in late July or early August, and our supervisor of elections, Alan Hayes, was there, and he was presenting to this Chamber of Commerce all of the wonderfulness about how the elections are run and everything. And he went on for about an hour, you know, with the PowerPoint presentation and the whole thing. And he's pretty smooth, you know. He served 8 years in the Florida House and 6 years in the Florida Senate. And now he's a supervisor of elections. So he rolled in with his staff and his team and his PowerPoint presentation and just told people that the elections are just perfect. Everything's great about the elections, right? So then I asked him about VR systems. I said, well, Alan, would you please explain to us the relationship between the Lake County Supervisor of Elections office and VR systems? And at the end of the whole explanation, I said, so let me just get this straight. You just told us that VR systems literally extracts the voter rolls off of your servers. They do whatever they want. They have complete possession of them. They can do whatever they want to the voter rolls. They then deliver the voter rolls to the Division of Elections, who makes their adjustments, and the Division of Elections in the Secretary of State's office sends them back to VR Systems, and VR Systems sends the voter rolls and reloads them back onto your server. And he said, yeah, that's exactly what happens. Okay? So that evening, he called me on the phone, and we talked on the phone for an hour and a half. And, you know, Alan and I have known each other for years, and, you know, it was really a walk for both of us. We were kind of walking a tightrope, right? Because we didn't really want to become super adversarial or anything. But at the end of the call, we agreed that we both understood fully exactly what's happening. Now, the only question is outsourcing the management of voter rolls good or bad? He says that it's great. He says that it's his responsibility to oversee what VR Systems does with our voter rolls, and that he assured me that he did a super job overseeing VR Systems, and that I should trust him to do that. To which I just said, you know, I respectfully disagree. And that's where we are. So this is where we are, not only with the supervisors of elections, but with most government agencies. They're saying, hey, you know, we're going to come in, we're going to make a budget presentation, we're going to ask you for millions and millions and millions of dollars of money, and we just expect you to trust us with the way we use your money. And that, I find that to be offensive. Do you?
It's absolutely offensive, especially when it gets to this election thing. And I just know, because I'm seeing some of the people that are out there listening, we've got to make sure that we put it out there. And I know you and I spoke about this. Here in the state of Florida, they first off, the Association of Supervisor Elections, it's all it's unfortunately, it's all corrupt. They're going to be in bed with whoever's going to give them money for their campaigns and whatever else incentives on the machines, blah, blah, blah. There's all that kind of garbage going on. But to think that we have at the state level, they're not going to allow us the option to have a manual count or to even audit via a manual count. They are telling us you're going to follow those machines whether you like it or not, and we're supposed to trust those machines because, I mean, look at what's happened in the last few elections. Why would we not trust those machines? I mean, the nerve of them to talk down to us that way and to take away our rights to control that ballot box. They forget whose ballot box it is. It's really very disgusting. And if they don't go out there and change that law to allow the manual count to validate the elections, there's going to be a lot of people here in Florida, man. There's going to be a lot of people who they should not be voting for, and I hope they don't, reelecting and electing to begin with. It's totally corrupt to not allow us to audit the elections. It's disgusting. And I know I'm speaking
Couldn't
for a few
more.
Of the people who are out there listening. If they don't go through with this, I know you were on that Defend Florida call, which was talking about the election integrity. So what are you doing right now at the local level with the GOP? And what do what are your thoughts on what to do to get them to give us the right to actually audit our elections?
Yes. Okay. Let me answer that question. Okay. So Monday, a week ago today, at this time, four of my friends and campaign supporters drove up to Tallahassee. We spent the night in Tallahassee. We woke up on Tuesday morning and we met. Raj and Defend Florida was there. The Republican Liberty Caucus was there. Florida Republican Assembly was there. And we were all lobbying the legislature. And then I will just tell you that on Wednesday, Defend Florida put together a press conference, and several of the state representatives who have election bills filed right now spoke at these two separate press conferences, and the opening speaker was Representative Bernie Jocks, who I met with Bernie Jocks in his office in Pinellas County last year after the Republican Liberty Caucus State Convention. He told me that he told the group that he was writing an election integrity bill. So I stood up and said, hey, I'm interested in that. And he said, well, make an appointment with my staff and come over and we'll talk about it. So I went through the election law line by line with an Excel spreadsheet. And everything that I felt needed to be adjusted, I put into an Excel spreadsheet. And I went over, I met with Representative Jocks. And I think that he's a lawyer. Representative Jocks is a prosecutor. And I think when he looked at my spreadsheet, he was kind of shocked because I think he really didn't know just how messed up the election laws actually are. Keep in mind, he's a freshman. And, you know, people that, like, for example, we were with Representative Carolina Amnesty the other day, too, and she was just almost in tears about how brutal being a state rep is, particularly as a Christian woman, because the press and the left pounds on her because of her graciousness. They just take advantage of the simplicity of her. You know, she's just such a nice person, and the left just brutalizes her. And she was nearly in tears as she was explaining it to us in her office how rough that job is. Now, of course, I know about it. I've been doing this forever. I've been watching politicians shred each other and carve each other up for decades, you know what I mean? So I'm not surprised at all. But Bernie Jacques actually spoke at this press conference, and he was frustrated. And he said, what's wrong with just giving local supervisors of elections a choice? So what I'm saying to you right now is this, Sally. Yeah. What I'm saying to you is this, okay? I'm sure people listening to this call right now are members of the Chamber of Commerce. Many of them are. Many of them are members of trade associations. Many of them are members of labor unions or whatever the case might be. And when we all look at our own personal experience as it relates to those types of organizations, this is what happens. We walk into a convention. We've prepared for the convention throughout the year. We set up an agenda for the convention. We have committee meetings. We debate stuff back and forth. And then eventually we walk into a board of directors meeting. We've already kind of wordsmithed exactly what our proposals for the organization will be for the next year. And then we have a vote. And let's just say the vote passes 60 to 40. Well, that means 40% of the people in the room did not agree with what just happened. Yet, we swear an oath to the organization that we're going to support what just happened, whether we agree with it or not. Now, let that sink in for a second, right? How important is that? And then again, take a look at the process, right? How many people that go into, look at the legislature, how many state representatives walk in to vote on a bill, and they're really not sure exactly what the bill says, but somebody assured them that it was good to either vote for or against. You can call it a caucus, right? They walk into the Republican caucus, they walk into the Democrat caucus or some other caucus, and they go in there and they say, you know, I really haven't had a chance to study this. And they say, oh, well, this is what our delegation is doing on that. So we just vote with the delegation, right? It's safe. It's very safe. All the Republicans voted for it. All the Democrats voted for it. So I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat, and I voted for it. So therefore, I'm insulated because the other Republicans and Democrats voted for it too, right? But it's not the right thing to do. Exactly. So here's the deal, Sally, because I know that you're a constitutionalist, right?
Right.
And go back to the days of our founding fathers, right? Did the statesmen who set up America – did they go in and say, hey, what are you guys doing? What do you guys want to do here? Oh, okay, great. I'm going to do that too. Is that what happened? No, that's not what happened. They all came in and expressed themselves. They brought a level of expertise to the subject matter at hand, and they argued their case. And that's what needs to be happening in the legislature. We need to be – and like, for example, my friend Taylor Yarkoski from House District 25 – prides himself. He's a freshman, and he prides himself on being a statesman, okay? But what exactly is a statesman? A statesman is somebody who takes a look at a subject, they build out an argument, they research it, they determine what are the variables going on in this particular piece of legislation or the discussion at the table. And then they make their arguments, and they understand the pros and cons of what's going on. And then they walk into the room, and they make their argument, not contingent on what somebody else told them, but their own personal point of view on this particular subject. But the truth of the matter is, in the Florida legislature today, that is prohibited. Do you agree with me, Sally?
I agree, and I would also have to extend that to say – it seems to be the standard to not listen or talk to the people you represent. That there seems to be a total lack of understanding of what representation is.
Exactly. So my point, sometimes when I'm on the campaign trail or I'm at a meet and greet event or a town hall or something like that, you know, I'll just open up the question and say, because what does it really mean? What does it really mean to take your country back? You know, we all walk around saying, we're going to take our country back. We're going to take our country back. But what does take your country back actually mean, right? And what taking your country back means is that we're going to be knowledgeable citizens. We're going to do a reasonable amount of due diligence on our own, and then we're going to hold our elected officials accountable. And I know that you're a big that you're very interested to be sure that people understand the difference between a democracy and a republic, and that is a critical point of differentiation. So when we send representatives to any city, the county, the state, whatever it is, we're sending people there to represent us. And to a degree, we're relying on their judgment. This is why it's so important. Let me just go ahead and go there, Sally. This is why term limits are important, right?
Yes.
Because incumbents are ridiculously hard to unseat. And we can drill down into that if you want to. But at the end of the day, term limits are important because when your representatives no longer represent your interests and deliver for you, you must vote them out of office, okay? And if you don't have term limits, I'm saying this to you. Let me just tell you something, Sally, real quick, because I think you'll appreciate this. In Lake County, Florida, before Alan Hayes became the supervisor of elections, Emma Jean Stiegel was the supervisor of elections. She got a job in that office when she was 18 years old, and she resigned when she was 98 years old. Okay? She double dipped on her pension, and I think she was the supervisor of elections for 50 years. Now, before Carrie Baker became our property appraiser, Ed Havel was our property appraiser in Lake County. He was our property appraiser for 40 years.
That's insane.
And if you want to upset a constitutional officer in Lake County, Florida, talk about term limits. They will catch on fire. These people are so smart. They are so charismatic, right, that they never lose their temper until you talk about term limits. And then, and fasten your seatbelt, Sally, because you know they're going to be coming after me. In my race, trust me, this is going to get ugly.
Well,
because
you mentioned
they do not
going
want
back,
oversight.
It went, talking about the term limits, okay? Now, you're in Lake County. I don't know if you were in Orange County at the time, but those a few years back, I was there. The county voters voted for term limits for the supervisor elections. I'll throw another few thoughts out there on this term limit stuff, but we actually voted to change it, but it got tossed out because the supervisor elections is considered a state office, so it had to be done at the state level. It's absolutely disgusting.
Right.
And when you talk term limits, now, just like in these particular positions, Bill Cowles, I think he probably spent 40, 50 years in that position. I think this is his last term for Orange County. But the thing is, as I've told people, when you talk about term limits, you really have to talk about term limits in public office, not one office, public office, because these people start at one level. They're out there at some county position or whatever else, and they go to a county commission. It could be a city council. Then they go to the county commission. Then they go to county mayor. Then they go to a state rep. Then they go to a state senator. Then they go to the governorship. Then they go to Congress. Then they go there. And the whole time they're building their network of people as they go along, and they're getting more and more money as they move up the food chain, and they're never done. It should be so – you can only be in public office for – elected public office for so many years, period. And so if you think you want to be in Congress up in D.C., plan on spending your time there. But you can't be going through this whole thing. Rick Scott, I think, is a perfect example. He's a governor now, and now he's a senator. I don't want him to be a senator. I didn't like him as governor. But you build on this networking of these other positions. And then, I mean, it doesn't take much. You can have two term limits. Well, two term limits at the county level, two term limits as the mayor, then two term limits at the state rep, two in the Senate, House, state House, Senate, et cetera, et cetera. And, 50 years later, where are you? You're up in Washington, D.C., after you've already laid this extreme network down below you. It's just we really have to clean it up. So anyway, that's my rant on
Thurmore. I hate to tell you, but it's even worse than that.
Oh no!
Because I'm going to explain this. You may know this, you may not. And you know, I'm very curious to know what the audience is thinking on as we have this discussion, right? But let me just add insult to injury, okay? And that is that the Florida House of Representatives has a political action committee, a PAC, right? Did you know that?
Yep, of course.
That the Florida House has their own PAC, right? The Florida Senate has their own PAC, right? So what is a constitutional officer's job in the state rep and the state senator's home county? You know what a constitutional officer's job is for somebody who's termed out of the Florida House and termed out of the Florida Senate? A constitutional officer job back in your home county is a reward for service.
That sounds about right.
Forgive me for, you know, I'll be honest with you, Sally. This really pisses me off. Okay? But take a look at it. Take a look at how many supervisors of elections, how many property appraisers were actually state reps and state senators before they became property appraisers and supervisors of elections, and then find out how much money they received from the Florida House PAC and the Florida Senate PAC when they originally ran for the first time for a constitutional officer job in their county. And you're going to find out that they were given out of those political action committees enough money to be undefeatable in their county. So let's just say that the Florida House gives you $125,000 and the Florida Senate gives you $125,000, you're walking into a countywide election with $250,000 to challenge some grassroots activist who struggles to raise $30,000, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what you're looking at. That is what you're looking at. That is the real world, Sally. That is the real world. And let me just say to you that many, many years ago, I have a very good friend of mine. His name is Jim Volpe, and he's up in the Villages. And he's 82 years old. He plays scratch golf from the white tees, amazing guy, right? And super influential in the Villages and everything. And we worked very hard together at the Lake County Republican Executive Committee beginning in 2010. And I told Jim then, I said, everything that you see, all of the I'm looking for a word to describe it. I'm just going to fold and give you a light word called atrocious. All of the atrocious things you see in the federal government are actually happening at home, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's all local.
Private
it
partnerships
local.
Are probably a good example.
Yeah, exactly. So that's just where we are. I mean, I'd love to tell you that everything's peachy, but it isn't.
Well,
we've covered quite a bit of it tonight. We've covered quite a bit of it tonight. When you get into the GDP, who's the biggest consumer of money? The government is. So business people suck up to the government so they can get contracts. Now, the private sector wants the government to be big because they're contractually participating in it, right? So pretty soon, everybody else is just left out. And I would suggest to you, Sally, that one of the biggest problems we have in America is that 50% or more of Americans do not believe there's anything in it for them. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, because we've allowed the government to be big in these.
They don't have access to it.
Public-private partnerships are the ultimate fascism. I mean, that there's most people don't understand, and I mean, I've even heard a few other so-called conservatives, whatever. Public-private partnerships are not good. They're fascism. It's the collusion of government in the private sector. And you mentioned these caucuses. This is true at the federal level and at the state level. Wait a minute. You're not supposed to have a group. You're not supposed to be representing one group. Once you get there, you represent the people of your district, and that's it. So when you have all these different caucuses, especially up in D.C., they don't have a white caucus. They have every other race, but they don't have one for that. And it's all insane. It's all taken away from the rights of the people. We don't have representation. And political action committees, they're nothing but money laundering tools, in my opinion. And I've tried to figure in a free society, free market, how do we truly control these political action committees? Because let's face it, DeSantis, whoever it is, whatever the group, they have a super PAC. Well, you can only give so much money to the candidate, so you give it to the super PAC. So you give it's all money laundering, and the same is true with these the RNC and the DNC, of course. I think the RNC is going broke because people are stopping to give it to them because they waste and are so stupid with what they do with their money. I would never give money to the RNC. I never have. But you shouldn't be giving money. You should give money directly to whatever candidate, and there should be those limits. All these super PACs are outrageous, and they need to be shut down too. So we have a very, very corrupt election. Trying to get the representation of our choice is almost impossible.
So it's interesting.
And that has
Dan,
to change. We really have to change it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
If I might interject, right? So you could literally have, let's take a state race like the one I'm in right now. You can literally have a candidate who raises $30,000 to run for a state race, but the PACs do their advertising for them, right? So, for example, again, and now if you don't mind, Sally, if you need to redirect me into another direction, feel free to do that. But I'm telling you that in my mind, elections should be local. Why do I want somebody from New York City choosing my state rep, right? That is insane. Yet a super PAC or any PAC, right, can come into Lake County, Florida, into my district, District 26, and they literally do all of my competitors' advertising for them. They pay for direct mail. They pay for television. They pay for radio. They pay for social media, right? And the candidate can just sit back and they can sandbag and say, oh, I don't have any money in my campaign account. Oh, guess what? I don't need money in my campaign account. I've got all kinds of special interests literally paying for my advertising, and there's no limits on that, right?
Well, that's the whole thing with these state attorneys, district attorneys. George Soros is out there funding the people on the other side, while the honest
that's
people can't, the true patriots can't get anywhere because they don't have that kind of money. So there has to be something done about the money that's behind all this stuff. We have the best government money can buy, and the best government money can buy isn't going to work for the working class. They don't, because they don't care about us. They really don't.
So,
but I do. I really want to stress, like, when it comes to some of this garbage going on, we can use the solar panels. And I do see one person, that's Karen out there. She's got her hand up to ask a question. The chat room is a little bit quiet tonight. It's like I tell you, sometimes it's busy out there and sometimes it's not. So can't see anything out there.
Right,
but when it comes to the state, like the NAC thing, that natural assets companies thing, the state would have has rights to nullify some of the stuff. The same is true with the ESG funding stuff, and these. And I know DeSantis has said he has taken action to block that kind of stuff, but we need to know more at a state level. How are you willing to vote against federal money from the Department of Education? I was up there, and actually Karen was with me. We were both attending some hearings and stuff in Tallahassee in reference to education. And I asked, don't remember the representative I was talking to at that time, but I said, when are you going to stop taking money from the federal government so that we can control education? If you're going to keep taking money from the federal government, then they're the ones who control stuff. When are the states going to assume some sovereignty and do what they're supposed to do and reject this garbage? The same is true with these solar farms that are destroying our agriculture and destroying the land. They're destroying the environment, too. It's all a fraud. What are you going to do at the state level to push back on that kind of garbage? Because they're harming us. But it seems like, and I'm sure you'll probably agree with me on this one, as soon as those people get elected into office and then that money starts coming their way, the pork, well, wait a minute, look what we're going to do for your county. We're going to give you this much money so you can have a solar farm. Yeah, we are destroying all your agriculture, and we're not going to really give you any energy. And here in the state of Florida, DeSantis has done things to destroy our natural gas and other things and garbage he's been doing. And how much is federal funding through any of that? I don't know. why are we spending money for EVs? What kind of benefit or credit are we getting from the federal government to buy EV buses for schools when they're not going to work? They're going to cost more money. The insanity of it all. I want state sovereignty again. I really want to know what you're going to, how you're going to support and promote state sovereignty, which is what I stress a lot when I read the American Creed. I make that point to say, as it states in it, a nation of many sovereign a sovereign nation of many sovereign states. So people forget we are a sovereign state. We got to push back this crap at the federal level and stop it, and hopefully we get some other people to do it too, because right now we are totally sold off to the federal government. Very disgusting. So I'll let you comment what you're thinking. What would you do to stop the solar and the wind? I mean, I don't know how much wind, but...
You know what?
And it's so much bigger
than just that. You know, I mean, the renewable energy conversation is just one of so many other conversations need to be had. But this just happens to be the shiny object that we're chasing right now. So I will tell you, just to get started, that when I was chairman of the Republican Party here in Lake County, one of our stakeholders stood up in a meeting one time when Rick Scott told the legislature that he would be willing to sign Medicaid expansion into law if the bill came out of the legislature with a couple of little provisions in it. And the member of the REC stood up and said, I think our chairman should write a letter to Rick Scott explaining to Rick Scott why we are opposed to expanding Medicaid in Florida. And it's exactly what you're talking about right now. The federal government came in and said they would pay for 100% of it in year one, and in year five it would be 90%. But pretty soon that Medicaid expansion was going to be all on the backs of Florida taxpayers, okay? So we were opposed to it, and we actually wrote a letter to the governor, and Medicaid did not get extended in that particular time. But I would like to suggest from a real estate standpoint, okay, that we had a – I'm telling you something, Sally. In my 30-year career as a real estate broker, I've been through recessions, okay? But, you know, I was really amazed as a younger man when a recession really only lasted about 6 months. And I said, wow, that was pretty easy, actually. You know, we kind of got through that. But when 2008 rolled around, that was a 15-year – I mean, you know, that was a big deal, you know, when the capital markets blew up. Because the mortgage-backed securities that were guaranteed by Fannie Mae, a government-sponsored enterprise where taxpayers bail out Fannie Mae if they lose money, right? That blew up the capital markets of the Western world because they packaged up these residential mortgages. And they were non-performing. And then next thing you know, George Bush was getting threatened by countries from around the world. Either you backstop these defaulting residential mortgage-backed securities, or we're going to start publishing in financial papers all around the world that America, is like penny stock, right? And, of course, George Bush stepped in. He told the legislature, you need to pass this overnight. Don't even bother to read it. Sign it into law, or the capital markets in America will be over. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Don't get me talking about the Bush clan. That's a whole other story
in itself. Exactly. Exactly. So my point to you would be, your question to me was, what are we going to do to embrace and to seize our sovereignty from the federal government? And I just want to preface my comment by saying, you know, that I haven't dotted my I's and crossed my T's on all this. But the truth is that we just really need to put programs together in Florida that separates us from federal programs. Like, for example, you brought up the Department of Education, okay? I mean, I personally think that public education needs a complete overhaul.
Yes.
And we're not going to get it as long as we keep begging Washington, D.C. for our money back, right? So number one, and I think Donald Trump has actually spoken to it, right? I mean, the Department of Education, just abolish it. I don't think we feel it.
I've heard that. I think Trump may be one who could get it done. But, I mean, back, I think it was Reagan was the first whatever. Back whenever the day, we've been talking about getting rid of the Department of Education for decades.
Jimmy Carter created it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Reagan was the first one that said to get rid of it.
Right. And I'll be honest with you, Sally. I'm sitting here, and we're looking at what the real estate market is right now, and we're at risk of another major recession here. If the right things don't happen in November, then America's in for another major recession, as far as I'm concerned. So I would like to see us wean ourselves off of Fannie Mae-owned mortgages. We need to incentivize, and I don't mean financially incentivize, but we need to make it. We need to create an environment in which banks want to set their own underwriting guidelines for residential mortgages, and where banks want to package up residential mortgages and sell them on the secondary market as mortgage-backed securities. And we can go through every single service, so to speak, if you call it a service, that the federal government provides to the state of Florida, and just ask the question, how can we do this in-house without them, right? And to wean ourselves off of all these federal government programs, so that if the federal – like let's just say Fannie Mae had another big debacle. It wouldn't affect – look, let me tell you something, Sally. The Canadians did not feel our 2008 recession because they didn't own American mortgage-backed securities. Let that sink in a second, right? They didn't feel it because it didn't affect them. Their banks didn't own our mortgage-backed securities, but they did in Ireland, and they did in other countries around the world, and, of course, it rocked our economy. And I just ask everybody who's been in power for any length of time, right, when do you accept responsibility for this, right? And think about that, Sally. Think how many – and I know this because I was involved, and the superintendents of the schools in pretty much every county in Florida were saying that they had thousands of children reporting to classrooms out of the back seat of their car, right? Yet we really haven't changed a damn thing. So we could go through that again.
Yeah, well, we got to get – when it comes to the banking, and I do want to go ahead and get Karen, and I see we have – looks like John's out there too now. Mm-hmm. People have got to understand the difference of the nanny state. We've allowed ourselves to be a nanny state that we expect government to fix everything. That's not what a free society does. So we've got to somehow get people – re-educated, because we know they've been brainwashed by public education, so that there is a lot that we have to do there. And I don't see the people running for office have to be putting the facts out there. We're not going to get too much into the convention of states, but that's another example. People don't know what a convention of states is, and they're out there thinking this is going to solve all our problems at the federal level, and it's not. People need to understand it's you know, when it comes to caring for, you know, the churches used to play a key role in helping us, but now because of their tax status and this and that and whatever else, they don't want to do it. And then you have NGOs out there and non-governmental organizations getting off, which are the true public-private partnership fascism routine. I mean, there's all these other pieces. People have to understand we have to shut down that stuff. And before I go to Karen, because she's been out there the longest, the when it comes to this federal funding, right there in Central Florida, the SunRail, I'm sure you've heard of it, know of it. SunRail, the whole reason, everything proved that SunRail was a boondoggle. It was never going to work. You're trying to get people off of I-4 into a very limited train system that only went so many hours. The whole thing was garbage. Many of us fought it down there. We proved all the facts. But it was because of you have these greedy politicians who are wheeling and dealing, making deals all over the place while taking money from the feds. And so, well, this is going to just be so wonderful. It's going to solve all our problems. And, of course, it doesn't, and it didn't. And now if they shut down SunRail, which it should be because it's still a boondoggle, still a waste, they would have to pay back that money to the federal government. It's such entrapment to the people, and the people didn't want it. The people said no, but they said, well, we don't care what you want. It's our money. It's not your money. It's our money. And so we need people at the state, the local, obviously, local and state level to push back on this. It's a scam. It's nothing but a scam. And, of course, you go up the food chain and you see how this has destroyed us. And when it comes to the banking stuff, go back to what Jefferson said, you know, a central bank is more harmful to us than a military. standing army, whatever. Exactly. It's not the exact quote, but
exactly.
That's the point.
Yeah.
And we need a state bank. They get away from the Federal Reserve. And you, at the state level, I don't know how influential you can have with shutting down the Federal Reserve, but the Federal Reserve needs to go away. It's ridiculous what they're doing. But it, since we by ourselves, the state can't necessarily get rid of that Federal Reserve by itself. They might be influential in getting other governors and whoever to work together. But at a minimum, do something to have a federal, have a state banking system of pushing or promoting regional banks, community banks, et cetera, and getting away from the Federal Reserve. I really feel like
so
we need
know,
to do
Senator,
that too.
Representative Doug Bankson has legislation filed in the Florida House right now to create a depository for gold and silver in Florida. And while we were lobbying the legislature last week, a gentleman there by the name of John Wiley, a member of the Republican Liberty Caucus, literally pulled a 1/1000th of an ounce gold bill out of his wallet. So we are moving towards trading gold and silver in Florida to insulate ourselves against the fiat currency that's happening in the United States, and for all the reasons that we know about with the petrodollar and all that kind of stuff, right? So this is actually happening in the legislature this session right now. Doug Bankson got a bill filed. A couple of other reps have filed it too, similar versions of the same bill that would actually create a gold and silver currency in Florida as an alternative to the United States dollar. True, in the legislature today.
Well, we have to do it. We got to do something because we cannot allow ourselves
gold
to be totally
taken down. Gold and silver works for me. How about you?
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. It does. Okay,
absolutely.
We got about, well, just as I spoke to you, the regular show was 2 hours that everybody from the internet can listen. But if people call in, we can go into a little bit of overtime if the questions dictate that, and you have time to do it, but they just you need to be calling in to listen after the 2 hours. But that's 48 minutes away from now, so we're starting to get some hands popping up here in the queue. So let's start taking some questions. This is Karen. Karen, as I was mentioning earlier, she and I went to Tallahassee about the education stuff, and she was on the Defend Florida call as well as her and I are usually on that call. So, Karen, are you there?
Yes, I am, and what a very interesting conversation many topics covered. Thank you. One of the suggestions that I would have with regard to taking federal money that nobody seems to ask is, how much money are we getting and what percentage of budget is that amount of money to institute that program? And then, conversely, how much is that program actually going to cost us? When Atwater was our CFO, I asked him that question on a topic. I also asked that same question to my superintendent in our county. And they were shocked when I asked the question, mostly because anything mathematical, finance, economics, anything like that, is not taught in school, so they don't go down that route. But when you ask that question and they're forced to answer, the answers are incredible. In the case of my superintendent, he said, well, we get about 5% of budget from the federal government. And then I said, and how much does it cost you to implement their program? And he said, all about 30 to 40% of budget. And I said, does that make sense? And he
those
said,
are unfunded mandates, right?
I never thought of it that way. Well, why don't we start thinking of it that way? Why take the money if it's going to cost us more to do that? I also asked Atwater, and I have to ask Petronas also, is Florida a donor state or are we a recipient state? Well, when Atwater was in office, we were a donor state. I said, okay, so you're giving the federal government money, and then you're begging them for the few shekels to come back. Does that make sense? And he said, I never thought of that. So I think we have to focus more on the financial part, which many do not even understand, and are sorely lacking in an education. And my whole beef with education is that we are being led by people who are affirmative action graduates. So it is quite sad to see that happening. Also, I don't know if people remember, but here's a good suggestion if you're going to vote for Rick Scott. I believe it was in 2011. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it was then because I remember writing an article. And Rick Scott pushed the Public-Private Partnership Act in Florida. They were not allowed in Florida until that act came about. So we have this public-private partnership disgrace going on now, basically because of the act that Rick Scott put in place. So when you are pulling that lever for him or filling in that little circle for him, remember that. We're in this mess because of a lot of the actions that he did. He's obviously not my favorite person. And then the other thing that I did want to go over was that Representative Jacques has an incredible bill, but he has no companion bill. And part of the problem is the way our legislature is set up, because the president of the Senate and the speaker of the House get to say, we're going to hear that bill, we're not going to hear that bill. And too many good bills get squashed because they can't get past the speaker or the president. And that's absolutely, to me, total disgrace, because it makes the representatives or the senators not want to sponsor a bill. If they feel that the speaker, Pasadomo, is against it, which is what's happening, then they're not going to sponsor a bill. So Jack's bill is going to be squashed because there's no Senate sponsor. So there's a lot of things in the Florida legislature that really, as far as I'm concerned, need to be changed dramatically. And hopefully someday we will get the right people in office, which is the other part of our problem, is that we don't vet our candidates. I mean, it's wonderful to be talking to you today because we are learning what your feelings really are. The majority of the time we get a candidate, he tells us about his home life, how many kids he has, where he went to school, how many churches he goes to. Who cares? I want to know, what is he going to do to help us? And this is lacking because the Florida RPOF does not vet candidates and the local RECs do not vet candidates. So unless you are able to have a one-on-one with some of the candidates, you don't even know who's running for office and what they stand for. So a lot of it and a lot of our problems, to me, are self-inflicted. We have given the legislature too much power. We've given our local county commissioners too much power, and that's our fault. We don't go to meetings. And we don't participate in our government. And this is the mess that we have created because of those issues. So I will give up my time. Or
Interesting. Karen covered quite a bit of territory there.
I could continue to talk, as you know, for a very long time. And I'm going to do that because I'm sure there are other people that would like to talk as well. So thank you for that info, Karen.
There is one thing I want to follow up on these public-private partnerships, because that was something we did talk at the very beginning. And Rick Scott. Rick Scott, I'm sorry, I never voted for him. I didn't vote for him, and I'm not going to vote for him again. We got to get somebody else in there, because he doesn't work for the people. He works for himself.
Yeah.
But when he was in office, now, this is a topic that people who know me know I got involved early on, was transportation. Growth and transportation go hand in hand. And toll taxes are one of the most regressive, abusive taxes there are. There's no reason for them. They do nothing but government jobs for people to take your money is what it ends up being. But it was with Rick Scott in there that they went out there, and that's when they changed this thing about the public-private partnerships, that these selling off these toll roads to different private entities. I don't know if they got too far with that or how far it ended up. I believe the Florida Turnpike Enterprise is now some kind of a private entity. But public infrastructure should be there for the public. It shouldn't be used as a cash cow to sell to private entities and public-private partnerships and all this other nonsense. It's very, very abusive. So that's one thing with Rick Scott. And then going back to what Karen said about the Florida Constitution prohibited business government going into and extending credit to businesses, aka public-private partnership type stuff. And then they've gone and changed it. So the state of Florida promotes fascism. That's the state of Florida changed their laws so they could promote fascism as much as possible. It's pretty disgusting to me. So that's something else that needs to be changed. Now, with that being said, we'll give Micah some time to respond to some of the things we said, and then we'll go to some other callers.
Wow. Portia, where you start?
Hey, yeah. This is an informed audience. That's the, you got to be aware. This is an informed audience.
Yeah, that's amazing. It really is. I'm typically opposed to public-private partnerships. I mean, effectively, what it is just a vehicle for the government to give money to choose winners and losers and to, Enterprise Florida was a classic example under Rick Scott, right? He, at some point, had legislation to channel $250 million to Enterprise Florida, which is a public-private partnership, and I'm pretty sure the legislature actually denied it, which is one of the few things that got denied, right? But I will tell you that in Lake County, our Board of County Commissioners is pretty pro public-private partnership. They really like them. I'm very wary, Sally and Karen, about public-private partnerships because it's just a great opportunity to take taxpayer money and give it to, organizations of your choosing, let's just say. And we can get so deep into that. There's so many situations. Like, why do constitutional officers have charitable budgets in their budget? We don't elect these guys to give money to selectively give money to charity. We hire the sheriff to run law enforcement. We hire the supervisor of elections to run elections. We hire the property appraisers to do property appraisals, right? So when does their fiefdom, get to be to the point that they get to unilaterally decide what happens with taxpayer money? And it goes right back to the private partnership conversation that we have. Right. And again, to address your concern, Sally, about tolls, and I'm just going back to my zero-based budgeting argument, and let me just say, I was in Majority Leader Albritton's office last year. I guess it was in October, November, when I was up there for committee weeks. And Majority Leader Albritton said that in 2023, the state of Florida had a $110 billion budget. He knew for sure that we were going to collect $125 billion in revenue, and he thought we might collect $140 billion in revenue. So then in 2023, the appropriations that came back to the counties out of Tallahassee, we had situations where recipients of those appropriations typically would spread the appropriation out over 3 or 5 years, but they were getting it all up front because literally the state of Florida needed to throw off cash. So, my point to you would be, to answer your question directly, we do not necessarily need toll roads if we would just manage the budget responsibly. And, of course, it's a huge budget. So, going through the budget line by line, point by point, I told the commissioners here in Lake County one time, we have a round administration building. I told them we should make it an arena and put a table in the middle of the round building. We should play a little game. Just go through the general ledger and say keep it or cut it, right? Just like I told you before about business, right? That's what we do every month. We reconcile our bank statements. We look at the expenses in our businesses. We say keep it or cut it, right? And if we did that, then we could pay for roads. We have plenty of money to pay for roads. We don't need –
The toll roads have always been a scam. And again, this is when I first got involved back in 96, when I first started getting involved in public policy stuff. And when I went through there, and I have submitted So DeSantis did actually lower some of the tolls on the turnpike, but I won't get too carried away with that just yet. But I submit it, if you truly need money for the roads, if that's what this is for, then here are other ways you could increase revenue without restricting people from using the roads, and it would be a lower tax to people. Different, and I still have it. I'll forward that to you because there's many ways we could do it. If in fact that was really what the intent was, but the intent is to never trust a trust fund. Okay, that's at the federal level, Social Security, Highway Trust Fund up there. The same is true at Florida. The Florida Highway Trust Fund, they take, just like the lottery and the school fund, I should say, the Department of Education, they take money out of that, put it to something else, then they raise the tolls. They say, well, we can just go out there and get this. And they don't know they've harmed the economy, local economy, substantially with what they've done by the excessive taxes. But they don't care.
Right.
We don't have people in public office at the state level, at the local level, at the federal level, who truly care about the people. If we could figure some way, and, you know, going back, as Karen said, who's to blame? We are to blame because we allowed it to get this way, but it's also to blame because public education dumbed down people. Education never teaches an individual how to get engaged with your local government, how to go to a hearing, how to let them know what you want or don't want, those types of things. So it's and now we're trying to undo the ignorance that's out there and undo the corruption that's out there, and it takes a lot. So again, I'll let you if you want to add any other comment to that, and then I'll go to
I would like to say something, because I'll tell you something. All you have to do is go to a couple of your county commission meetings, okay, or your I refuse to live in a city because I just don't want to unnecessarily expose myself to a taxing authority. But if you go to a county commission meeting, eventually, you'll probably in meeting number one, you're going to hear your county commissioners talking about this proposal is good, is a revenue generator for our county. Okay? Now listen, all government has to be funded, no question about it. But when elected officials take on as their mission to increase the revenue coming into our government agencies, it effectively is stripping money out of the private sector and is creating the fascism that you're referring to. But when people get, you know, when people get into public office, they think it's their responsibility to grow the budget, the budgets plural, that they manage, and this is the root of the problem. I told Sean Parks here in Lake County in 2010 when he got elected, I supported him, right? And I said, Sean, it's your job to keep the government small. It's my job to make my private sector company big. And people don't get it, but that's the root of the issue right there. Elected officials' job is to keep the government small and to be good stewards of taxpayer money. But that is not the mindset that most elected officials have. And I'll turn the floor back over to you, Sally.
Yep, and I'm going to go to Cindy next here. The other thing that has to be stressed with the public-private partnership stuff is the true manipulation the government controls. Because it's now the collusion of government and the private sector, and this is how they've been able to push so many stupid regulations through, because of these public-private partnerships. Once they have their hooks into these companies, then Fauci was the perfect example. Fauci said, no, the government's not going to make you take the vaccine. It's going to be the businesses. The business want to do business with the government, blah, blah, blah. You're going to have to do what they want. So they're going to make the businesses. That's the ultimate example of fascism. Well, that being said, let me get Cindy out here. Okay. Cindy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, but I came in late, so I don't know who the guest is. What is his name? Could you just tell me his name? Hello?
Mike Levine. He's a candidate for District 26, Florida House.
Okay. I live in Martin County. I've been living here for almost 28 years. Before that, I lived in New Jersey, and I also lived in Jupiter before I lived in New Jersey. Anyway, I can tell you that it is pure cronyism. I will tell you about Martin County. Martin County is the non-growth county, not anymore. And I'll just repeat it, and Karen will hear me. Maggie Horchella, who was Janet Reno's sister, wrote the first comprehensive plan. That's why 95 is way out west. Nat Reed in Jupiter Island, one of the richest communities in all of America, saved the land, put it into conservation, and helped keep everything at bay to a point where it was detriment, where maybe they should have allowed 500, you know, a company to come in that had 500 people. They would oppose it. And now we have such growth, and I don't mean to insult anybody, but it is the realtors. It is the developers. It is the engineers. It is cronyism. It's my friend who's a traffic engineer. It is the non-for-profit. Last night, my friend, the traffic, and she was, you know, giving money to the Boys and Girls Club, sponsoring it. And then they go up in front of the county commission and everybody, I call it a prize. They do a, they give them a prize, and, oh, I'm going to give the Save the Horses $100,000 a year. Really, that's not the job of the government. Now what we have is cronyism. We have CRA boards, community redevelopment boards. Who sits on the boards? Builders, sorry, realtors, developers, you name it. Everybody who has a stake in it. Attorneys who have a stake in it. Then we have the boards like, you know, where everybody gets appointed. We are so, it's a mess. And plus we have Agenda 21 in the city of Stewart. Now they approved a Hilton on a road. If you saw where it was, first they did the roundabouts. We told them not to do the roundabouts, but they went ahead and did it. We actually filmed the tractor trailers trying to get around the roundabouts from US 1. They are putting in Agenda 21 sustainable development. They have ruined the river a prize here. Beautiful little houses on the river torn down for four-story condos. The Chamber of Commerce is a disgust, all three of them. Now we're going out to Palm City out west, and, of course, we need to make a town, so we're going to make a town now, fake town, I call it, so we can gentrify that. Now the next thing is we're going to go to East Stewart, and we're going to take over the black community, and then we're going to put the train station in so everybody from Miami and Orlando can come down here and ride their bicycles through our town, which is funded by the the bike path coming in with the federal government. And I could go on and on and on. They fixed the drainage over here in Sewell's Point where I live. They flooded my property. I had to hire an attorney. They don't care. The to tell you the cronyism how bad it is, the engineer of the project is mostly everybody uses. His brother renovated my house. I go to church with him. To quote my congressman, I have Lake Michigan in my backyard with the Mississippi River running through it. But down the street, the Ukrainians just bought a house or a building, probably $25 million they're putting in. Across the street, somebody bought that for $15 million. They don't care about us. Us little people who bought here back in the day for $300,000, we're just like, move along, move along. We want your house. We want your property because we can get more tax dollars. And really, honestly, that's what it is. It is a total disgrace. We go to the meetings. They ignore us. Nobody says anything. These people have been to my house. Now we're running candidates. Most of the candidates that we're running are people who have never been in office and who grew up here and are totally disgusted. I think it's we shouldn't have realtors. I'm sorry if you're a realtor. We shouldn't have realtors. Anybody that has anything to do with building, development, all of that shouldn't be allowed on these CRAs. They shouldn't be commissioners. And now we found out that one of the commissioners, she has two children. She grew up here. Her house is being paid off by somebody who gave her the money to buy this house, and he's paying the mortgage. What the hell? And meanwhile, we're struggling here. People are struggling. You know, they don't have, I mean, you know what it's like. It's inflation. And so now they raised our taxes so they could give the firefighters and the sheriff's department money, which is a joke, because the reason is that one of the candidates, Doug Smith, who's a commissioner, for 22 years, and you know what he does? He gets the firefighters, and then if somebody tries to oppose him, he'll put somebody in, and the firefighters are working for him. And that's what's going on now. So The gloves are off. I had a meeting this week, and we are going to, we have a billboard. We're going to shame them. Now it's time to shame them. We're going to put pictures of them with the non-for-profits. We're going to take pictures of their $80,000 cars. We're going to take pictures. We're going to do it all. And this is why it's so bad. We, the people, have no control anymore. And shame on us for letting it happen. But I do believe it's just beyond any imagination. I can't believe it has happened here in Martin County. I go home and I cry. That's how sad I feel about it. They ruined my town. My town was beautiful, once a beautiful, yep, small little town. But they have to make everything bigger and better. So, you know, one last thing and I will say. Maggie Hurtella, who was Janet Reno's sister, obviously I didn't have a lot in common with her, but at the end of the day, she did the right thing. And you know what the slogan was back in that day? Don't Broward Martin County. She's rolling in her grave right now. This developer sued her, okay? They took her car. What they did to her in the end is just horrendous. And the old folks, the old money on Jupiter Island, Nat Reed passed away. A lot of the old money died off. Now we have big hedge fund guys going in and tearing down the $10 million houses and building $50 million houses. It's so in your face that in Hope Sound out west, they passed this community. You can build your house. Sally, hold on one more thing. And then they built guest cottages with the house. Meanwhile, the homeless people are on the corner. So that's kind of, I don't know how we fix it. We have to shame them, I think.
Well, wasn't there something going on, too, where they were building for the illegals, too, the housing? Because we have to take care of illegals. We can't take care of veterans, but we can take care of illegals. Wasn't there something like that going on in your area, too?
Yes, matter of fact, we have footage of white buses coming in, going out to Selfish Point, which is a very expensive community out by the ocean. But before you get to Selfish Point, there are all these houses up on stilts. They have films of them coming off the bus because they're B&Bs or whatever they are, Airbnbs.
Yep.
And the Catholic school is harboring them too. And our sheriff, who was a representative, who tried to get the E-Verify bill done, this is years ago. I was on Flyman, Floridians for legal immigration. And we got this bill together and he sponsored it and he was all, you know, all for it, you know, E-Verify. We have E-Verify now. I mean, it's a joke. Everybody knows it's a joke. It's a weak bill and we have illegals all over. And yeah, they're gentrifying where the illegals live. Oh yeah, we got to make that nicer too and spend more money that we don't have. But it's free money because it comes from the federal government. That's how they think. So now we've had two accidents of illegals getting run over because they put a medium in with all these fancy schmancy trees while they're crying about we should be more green and consider about the water. The water, the river is filthy. We have Okeechobee runoff. It is in your face. I don't know what to do except maybe move to a town where there's 10 people.
Well, we'll go back to Mike here and definitely talk about the illegals and what's Florida doing or what are you aware of that Florida's doing about these illegals, who's paying for them. We know that DeSantis shipped a few busloads out to Martha's Vineyard and stuff, but what's your take on that and, of course, some of the other things that Cindy was talking about?
Well, I just agree with Cindy that it's in your face. As I said earlier when we first started talking, that I think many government officials are contemptuous about their constituents. So I totally agree with Cindy that the government has become so powerful that they despise their constituents, which is horrible. And they make decisions without taking their constituents' circumstances, their opinions, and their aspirations into account. And I totally agree with that. As I said before, it's about raising the tax base for the governmental agency that they're overseeing. And I think that's just the wrong approach. And Cindy, I am a realtor, but I will tell you that I have the I have the ability to make subjective decisions that are not necessarily in my personal best interest, and that's really what the deal is. You know, we have to have legislators who are willing to govern for their constituents, not for their own personal financial gain. And that's, you know, which is hard to find today, because honestly and truly, I think that our, again, I'm running on Judeo-Christian values, right? And, you know, Jesus, love your neighbor like yourself, right? I mean, I usually use that somewhere. When I do a town hall, that typically comes into it, right? That you have to love your neighbor like yourself. And when you certainly destroy people's lifestyle and their livelihoods and things like that based on government decisions, then you certainly are not consistent with that Judeo-Christian value of loving your neighbor. So I'm a realtor, but I'm very capable of doing that. I'll do that as a state rep. As it relates to illegal immigration, I think, Sally, you may be able to basically dot the I's and cross the T's, but I think we just have to declare an invasion, right? I mean, constitutionally, I think that's the only way that the states can protect themselves against this just horribly dangerous situation with millions and millions of illegals living among us. We have no idea who they are. We have no idea. First of all, they just shouldn't be here, period, because it is illegal. And after that, we have to protect ourselves from these people, right? So I think that, well, and you can help me me with this, Sally. I think declaring an invasion is really the only recourse we have.
Well, and this is what's really sad on the Ron DeSantis thing. And I'll go to looks like got Joe out there too. Joe is running for a House position up in North Carolina. But this is what's so sad with DeSantis. If you, instead of playing games running for the presidency, if he would have been a true leader of the governors and helped coordinate, work closer with Abbott and of course, it would have been nice to have been Kerry Lake out there in Arizona, but to bring the governors together to actually take action at a state level to declare this invasion and to take action, he could have done so much more, and he would have been so much more respected, and it would have been the right thing to do. We've got to get these people at the state level to do something about this, too. There is an invasion. But when I say that invasion, people also have to go back and talk about this global compact on immigration that Biden signed. Somebody's got to talk about what the agreement that he signed with the UN for a refugee program. Because pay attention to what they say out there on the left side, the nonsense, the fraud. They don't refer to them as, of course, they never refer to them as illegals. Sometimes they'll say migrants, but they frequently say refugees now. They're calling them refugees because that's what they're called in this compact. We're going to allow migration, open migration, safe, and migration to wherever they want in the world kind of stuff. And nobody's talking about the fact that Biden signed into this. So when you say it's illegal, It's unconstitutional. His action was unconstitutional. There's no two ways about that. But if we actually had a Congress that did something, and if we actually had the state legislatures that did something, maybe something we could control this. It's just insane the way they do it, or what they haven't done. Let me go ahead and get Joe on here. Like I say, Joe is a candidate for state representative in North Carolina. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Hello. Well, I was trying, going a little bit off now. I was trying to get on the Federal Reserve topic there, abolishing the Federal Reserve. I mean, there's a step program to do it. Obviously, first of all, you have to, you've got to get rid of the fractional reserve banking system, the practice of fractional reserve banking. But to pay off the debt, though, the United States government can issue, if they can issue a $1 bond, they can issue $1 bills, So that's the problem that we have is we have to, there's so many different ways of going about this, but everybody thinks that, if we go back to the gold standard or silver, back to the dollar or gold or silver, that's going to work. That's not going to work. One proposal is, I remember there was a proposal that came out years ago, if you watched that documentary by the Money Masters. Gives you a Money Reform Act proposal, basically the same thing as what I'm trying to talk about here is how to pay off the U.S. debt, and which can be done within 3 years and with very little pain. you know, but and if anyone has ever watched that documentary, it gives a very detailed analyzation of how the Federal Reserve has destroyed our economy and how it controls our until we get control of our monetary system, because right now monetary policy is not controlled by our government. It's controlled by the Federal Reserve, which is a private banking cartel. Okay, that owned and operated by offshore bank board members that are not even Americans. So we have got to get back control of our monetary system before we can start spending any money, funding any programs, or de-escalating any programs. Because because everything else we're talking about is all for naught. It means nothing. It does nothing. It's just lip service until we control. Because everyone has to have a bartering system. We have to have a monetary system to barter with. It's just the way things are, the way the world operates. And until we get control of that and we return an honest monetary system to our government, then everything else is just lip service. We're just never going to fix anything. I don't understand why we can't understand that.
Okay, but Joe, let me put something out there because my question has we're in total agreement. We've got to get rid of the Federal Reserve. But what can the states do to isolate themselves? I was saying about the state bank or whatever, do something to get away from the Federal Reserve. What can you do at a state level? Because this is something you would be interested in too, so that we can get around. Yeah,
I'd have to look at what the laws are, because from what I'm understanding is the state can't issue its own money. The state can't coin its own money, according to the Constitution. So that would be something I'd have to look into. As far as I know, I could be wrong, but from what I understand,
Joe,
the Constitution doesn't give us authority to coin our own money.
But the Constitution does say that the federal government cannot prohibit the states from coining money based on gold and silver. So that's the reason why the state of Florida is moving in that direction. Did you hear
that's true.
It's in your Constitution. I don't know exactly. Let me take a look at it. I'm not sure exactly where it is, but I read it over the other day because this guy Doug Banks in here in Florida has a bill on filed right now to create a gold and silver depository. The next step would be to actually print exactly. I was with a guy the other day in Tallahassee who brought out of his wallet a gold leaf that weighed 1/1000th of an ounce, and it looked just like a dollar. It was gold, of course, but it's interesting. So I think we are taking steps in that direction. But the Constitution does say the federal government cannot prohibit the states from coining money based on gold and silver. And that's the impetus by which we're doing it here in Florida.
Can I take a picture?
Okay.
So now, I understand
your
point. You're saying gold and silver is not the salvation. I agree with you on everything else. I don't disagree with you about anything. The Federal Reserve controls the economy. The Federal Reserve's private sector. It's controlled by people outside the United States. Yes, yes, yes. But one thing that our state is considering doing, and it could at least – minimize the – give us an alternative, should things bad happen, right?
Hey, and somebody else I heard talking in the background in some private conversation, so if you're not actually on this discussion, go ahead and hit the mute button. Joe, did you want to respond back?
Yeah, I didn't know if somebody else was trying to interrupt or not. I didn't know. But, you're right. From what I read here, it says, unlike individual communities which are allowed to create their own currency, as long as it's easily distinguishable from U.S. dollars, the Constitution bans states from printing their own paper money or issuing their own currency. But it allows the states to make gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. So,
There you go.
See, I think we have to think about doing that. Whatever we got to do to break away from the Federal Reserve, we have to do something on that too. The state's got to take some kind of action to push back on that, because as those of us that have been anywhere engaged in the subject knows, it's a private bank. Go out there and look at how the Creature from Jekyll Island, the book that explains how it all came about, and it's all a scam against us. And the Federal Reserve makes it sound so federal. There's nothing federal, nothing governmental about it. It's just a scam against the people.
But,
and they're destroying it.
But
that's all part of it.
But, okay, so what would be our relationship? What would be the relationship? And see, the relationship between the states and the federal government, then the only way that the federal government can influence the states is through what? The distribution of grants, incentives, and state aid. So state and local governments are, even though they're eager to obtain federal dollars, we can print our own, coin our own gold and silver, you're saying. But then what kind of cooperation are the states going to have with each other as far as bartering goes? See, now we're getting into, individual states. One state's not going to agree with another state. Now we're going to have conflict there. So we've got to be careful with that, you know?
Sally?
Yep. Yes. Yeah. But Karen, is that you?
Yes.
What
we should be doing, Joe, is making a compact with other states and working with those states. Tennessee is doing the same bill. They're doing a gold and silver bill also. Basically, I don't believe we need the federal government. I don't believe we owe a debt. They forced that upon us. They've been stealing from us for years. Okay, eat your debt. And there's no reason for us to be paying this exorbitant debt for nothing that we asked for nothing that we wanted, and why are we doing it? So it's the same thing that I go back to with the economy. If people understood what economics was, what balancing a budget was, what it meant, then I would be telling the Federal Reserve, you printed the money. Nobody asked you to do that. You've been stealing. Too bad. You get it. That's it. The same thing with China. How much did they force upon us with COVID? Was that $2 trillion? Okay, we don't owe you any money. You've got to play hardball, and we have to be able to save ourselves. And making contacts with other states, I think, would be the answer, because I don't see secession. I don't see anybody doing that. But I do see different states. I believe Louisiana is doing the same thing also. They're going to have a gold and silver coinage also. So let's work with the states that are the same and are in the same vein that we are.
Okay, and with that being said, I'm going to go back to Mike here. give Mike a chance to respond here. Again, this is where I'm pushing that I want state sovereignty. This is a very good example of what we need to do, the compacts amongst the states, and have some state sovereignty again. What are your thoughts on that? What do you think you could do? We know it wouldn't be easy.
Well, ultimately,
go ahead.
Ultimately, when we passed the 16th Amendment to the Constitution, that was all over. When we gave the federal government the right to tax us individually, that's when we lost it, right? Back before the 16th Amendment, the states, and it goes right into our immigration conversation also, Sally, that the states were taxed based on the population of their state. So the states funded the federal government before the 16th Amendment, where the federal government collected taxes directly from American citizens. And the states paid taxes to the federal government based on their population, which was an incentive for the state to keep the population down, right? And there was a formula for it. So, and of course, we all – I understand that, the probability in the next couple of years of abolishing the 16th Amendment to the Constitution is a low probability task, but it would certainly, I would suggest, and I've said for decades, that we should pay our taxes here in the state of Florida. In the state of Florida, all the states should pay the federal government. And before the 16th Amendment, that's exactly what was going on. So, if I had an opportunity to abolish the 16th Amendment of the Constitution, I would do it of sovereignty.
And that needs to be discussed. And there's all sorts of stuff. I won't even begin to get into what that 16th Amendment really is, had taxing income versus taxing profits and whatever.
Right.
There's all that even
exactly.
Gets pretty messy. But it truly should be when we talk about what we want to amend or eliminate from the Constitution. Getting rid of the 16th Amendment would be one of the biggies to me. It should be.
Me too.
There's other ways to tax people fairly.
Well, the job,
Kelly,
of the federal government? What is the job of the federal government? It's to what? Regulate interest and foreign commerce, declare war, setting taxing, spending, and other national policies that like such as immigration. You know, all this other stuff the federal government does, this nationalization of things, is unconstitutional. And to have a direct tax on the people is unconstitutional.
Okay,
well,
so my point would be that this should be, this should just be sovereignty through nullification. Any law that's any agency that's not constitutional should be dissolved. Any regulation that was created by the administrative state, because again, the Constitution gives the legislature the sole authority to create laws. Yet the administrative on the executive branch is creating laws all the time with rules and regulations. So this is called sovereignty through nullification. Everything that the federal government is doing that is not specifically granted to the federal government should be nullified. That's my opinion.
Yes, so you have to get the legislators on board with the and you have to have a governor there that's going to be on board with you, or unless you have overriding power, you know, to override the governor's veto. So, and you have to have, like I said, you state legislators have to do this then, you know, and how are we going to do
governor,
that?
Really, truthfully, Joe, I think you and I agree that the governor's the key. And, of course, you know, the bottom line is when you have a governor that wants to be the president of the United States, you know, that's a conflict of interest, if you want to know the truth.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no,
he's
I agree,
sucking
yeah.
up to the federal government because he wants to be the president, right? So we have to protect our state sovereignty first, A1. And I would suggest that in the counties, we should protect our counties too. I mean, if you take a look at the whole concept of a constitutional sheriff, that is really important, that sheriffs agree with the citizens in their county that they will protect citizens in our counties from the federal government if push comes to shove. Right.
That's
so,
right.
I mean, this whole thing is just out of control. Like, I'm sure everybody on this call totally agrees. I haven't heard anything on this call that would be inconsistent with that with that concept. But we've got to take our I wrote in my little proclamation that Sally posted, you know, that every citizen is forget about national sovereignty. Forget about state sovereignty. What about the sovereignty of every single citizen of this country? Right. I mean, and, you know, when you get into it, I am anti-collectivism at every level, okay, because collectivism is the worst thing that happens to human beings, in my opinion. Sally?
Absolutely. Let me let everybody know we're down to about 3 minutes. If you're listening on the Internet and want to continue to listen, you need to call in right now. That's 347-857-4364 so that you can continue to listen. I see Nathan has his hand up out there too. So are you ready for the next question? Nathan is in Orange County. He's or Central Florida.
Hi, Nathan.
Okay. Nathan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Here's what's on my heart. One, you guys were talking on what your other subject was just recently. Article 1 has a lot of answers in there we need to study. But here's what my big thing is. You know, the two-party system, there is no two-party system nor electoral college that serves those two parties in the U.S. Constitution. And it's the two-party system that gives us red and blue cities, counties, and states, which is not right. But here's the thing. The Congress members in the state don't go to Congress to represent the Republican or Democrat party. They go to represent the population of the states. And they're not – there is no districts in the Constitution for the Congress members. All the Congress members in Florida that goes to Washington, D.C., could all live in the same house, be roommates. They got two jobs. One is to represent the people, and the second one is to bring the money back to the states, to the state, and not to a section of the map, you know. And this is why we have, and this has started as a systemic prejudice system that started back in an earlier time in America, that we get a bridge in our neighborhood, but those guys across the railroad tracks, they don't get the money that we got to do what they need to do. And this here is a systemic racial, political, economic, whatever other word you want to add on there, a division of people. We were all one people as Florida. You know, that's my thing.
We're all different. No, we're all individuals. No, we're not all one. We're all equal. No, we're all different.
We're all Floridians.
Just keep in mind.
One's got blonde hair. One's got blonde hair. Another one's got red. And another one's a brunette.
Yeah, but we're all the same.
We're all Floridians. We're all one people as far as our state. We're all Floridians.
Well,
Nathan,
hold on one second. When we talk about the Electoral College, that is strictly the election for the presidency. So we're not going to talk about electing a president here. We're going to talk, with the exception, if you want to talk about how Florida, the state of Florida, picks their electors that cast the vote for the president, that I think is a topic that we should probably discuss. I don't know if Mike wants to get into that one right now, of how Florida manipulates the system for the selection of electors. That's a whole other piece. And there's obviously so that part I'm not sure how much we want to go into here. But when it comes to a state sovereignty, taking back our rights from the federal government, what, as a state representative, what do we want or expect Mike to do on behalf of the people he represents, which happens to be District 26 in the state of Florida? At a state level, I don't know what the state constitution says about districts, but we're not when it comes to the state representative, I want to make sure we're not mixing up. As a state representative, what you do, you obviously adhere to the U.S. Constitution too, but you're also following the state constitution. So what exactly is the question that you want Mike to answer in reference to state responsibility?
Wipe the district out. There is no district. It's only your own population for Congress members. According to the U.S. Constitution.
Are you talking Congress? Are you talking the state representative?
I'm going to look for every opportunity to divest us from the federal government. So, you know, whenever we see a national threat of any kind, we take a look at it and say, how can we separate ourselves from this threat, and how can we set up programs or eliminate programs in Florida that would protect us from bad federal decision making? And that's how we do it. We take a look at every time we see something that the federal government's doing that we don't like, we ask the question, how can we avoid being involved in this? And then we set up programs, constitutionally compliant programs that insulates Florida from bad decisions that are made in Washington, D.C. Does that sufficiently answer the question?
I'm making the statement that Congress members, and this is what the federal constitution says about Congress members. They represent the state, not districts.
Okay,
yeah,
but that's
I understand your point.
Yeah,
I understand your point.
So the question becomes how do states utilize
their representation in the federal legislature. And I understand your point, Nathan. I don't disagree with you necessarily, but when you start sending legislators from different districts around the state of Florida, then it's just a cultural situation. You know, I mean, that's what congressmen do. They bring home the bacon. So the question becomes, how do you define home? And Nathan, I'm suggesting to you, you're saying that it's the state of Florida as a whole. So basically, possibly, Nathan, we would bring federal dollars into the general fund of the state house, and then the governor and the legislature here in the state of Florida would decide how that money is spent. You know, that's a possibility.
I don't see that really happening
anytime soon. I don't think that's our first priority at this point.
Well, the reason that districts is a big thing for me is we can change. I'll give you a good example. Colonel West, Congressman West, he went up and the Republicans didn't like, he was a little too extreme for him. So to get rid of him, they redistricted him over into a Democrat zone and he lost. They gave him an opportunity.
Sure.
You know, that's the Republican Party deciding who they want up there as a congressman, not the people.
No.
Republican Party of Florida is horrible about it. I mean, Republican Party of Florida gets involved in primary elections all the time, and they definitely get involved in, you know, who gets elected in Florida. I've been there front and center. I served at the Republican Party of Florida for over 4 years. I've seen it. I've stared the monster in the eyes. I understand exactly what it is. So I agree with you on that, Nathan.
Yeah.
The Republican Party of Florida definitely puts its thumb on the scale of who gets elected, and elections are not necessarily local because entities from outside of your district influence who gets elected from the district, which I'm totally opposed to all of that unwanted influence. I think people, no matter what your district is, whatever you're running for, however the district is defined, the people who citizens who reside in that district should be solely allowed to choose their representative, and that's totally not what's happening at any level in Florida.
Yeah, well, I have absolutely no respect for the Republican Party of Florida, and I know Karen doesn't have too much respect for him either. There needs to be major, major reform on that piece too. While, of course, as a state representative, that's not your job per se, even though it would be interesting to know.
As a Republican,
what you, it's kind of, yeah, I mean, it's the games that get played with this. And you know, Nathan and I are both pretty much fed up with parties in general. I'm an NPA right now, and I'll probably end up registering as a Republican to vote in the primary, which I shouldn't do. We didn't even get into the closed primary and the open primary, which is right now. Trump is fussing because they have open primaries in New Hampshire. I've heard different stories as to whether the Democrats can cross-vote into the Republican piece. I don't know about that. But they have this whole group of NPAs. Florida has a lot of NPAs, and I know Nathan can probably give you the number on that one. But there's truly more NPAs than there are Republicans. Collectively, it's we're a bigger, very major portion of the voters, yet we don't really get much of the representation because of the way the gerrymandering and everything else. How do we actually take the vote back is probably the bigger question.
Yeah, if you go to – this is just a one short pass. Go to Orange County Supervisor of Elections and look at how many more no-party affiliates there are than there are Republicans. And then go across the state and the states, and you see this same pattern. And the Republicans aren't hearing somebody saying something. The people have spoken, and they are not hearing. And, you know, so I'm a no-party affiliate.
But let me tell you something. There's a lot more to that than most people know.
Yes, sir.
So, for example, when people go renew their driver's licenses in Florida, if they don't specify party affiliation, they're moved to NPA. So the no-party affiliation voters are on the rise because people don't understand when they go to renew their driver's license that if they don't select Republican or Democrat, they're automatically moved to NPA. So Republicans and Democrats who go to renew their driver's license are being moved to NPA because they don't make a choice because they're just unaware of that situation, and we know it. So this is another – there's a bill in the Florida House right now that prohibits the Department of Motor Vehicles from changing a voter's party affiliation without the express – which it's in the election law as well. Right. So that's another big deal in Florida. So everybody's looking at the rise of NPAs, and they're saying that, you know, the voters are abandoning the Democrat and Republican Party, when in fact it's the way they renew their driver's license that is a big part of the change in the number of NPAs. So that is not an organic movement. Excuse me?
Why are they doing that, do you think?
Personally, I don't think the Department of Motor Vehicles should be involved in voter registration at all.
Yeah, I know. Why are they doing
an abomination?
What's their agenda?
What? Yeah, I don't know. Is Karen still there? Karen, do you have any idea why they're playing that game with it to begin with?
Mm-hmm. Oh, because they don't want because of the closed primary. So whoever is the flavor of the month and whatever they want, you know, if they want the Democrats to win, if they want the Republicans to win, they can manipulate. Then you have all of the NPAs who can't vote in the primary and then they can get their candidate in because it's usually the grassroots that wind up being the NPA.
Which
means
let me
add another dimension to the conversation, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead,
so
Mike.
For example, this is what happened. We have to remember that in context, our state is not that old. So the stakeholders in Florida, they want to keep the number of voters down, and they very much prefer electing our elected officials in the primary than the general because it's cheaper, fewer voters, less dollars, more controllable.
Yep.
So both parties, the Uniparty, has agreed that moving people to NPA makes it easier for both of them to control their nominees and their representatives to the general election by excluding voters. So they move them from either D or R, their party affiliation, into NPA because it's just cheaper to market to fewer voters than more voters. And, of course, every collective organization I've ever been involved in eventually says at the boardroom table, hey, we have too many voices sitting around this table. We can't get anything done because people oppose the leadership's point of view, okay? So if all those NPAs actually chose one party or the other, it would just make the elections for the super PACs a lot more expensive.
So let me follow up.
They're minimizing the cost of controlling the elections.
Yeah, and let me follow up on that real quick, too, because we've had a lot of discussions on different shows, and we were even talking last week some on with Joe. The other issue of this, personally, this is what I would like to see. As a state representative, maybe you could push this initiative, put the word out there. No one should be elected in a primary. But that's exactly why they do it. I have put it out there, and I even sent it to the Trump campaign, that they're excluding the NPAs. And at a nationwide level, you have over 50% of the voters who are either NPAs or some third party, Libertarian Party, whatever else. And so over 50%, 50+% of the voters do not truly participate in these elections, in the majority of our elections.
We're not going to be in North Carolina, Sally. That's what's happening here in North Carolina.
Exactly.
I'm just going to say something that's probably inconsistent with the views of everybody on the call right now. And I don't want, as a Republican, I think there should be, one time the League of Women Voters asked me, why do you support the two-party system? And my response was the two-party system is better than a one-party system. And if we had multiple parties in our country who had a shot at winning, that would be better. Okay, so my point is, as a Republican, I don't want people that are not affiliated with the Republican Party choosing our standard bearer. I just don't. I'm not interested. I am in favor of closed primaries because I don't want Democrats and NPAs choosing the standard bearer for the Republican Party.
No.
That's just me. Now you may disagree with that, and that's fine. We can disagree. But I personally do not want NPAs choosing the standard bearer for the Republican
Cheers.
Party.
Okay, and I'm going to put this out there because everybody's heard me say this before. The fact of the matter is any political party, the RNC and the DNC are the ones, of course, people mostly think of, are private entities. The fact that the process is that you're making me choose to be a Republican or a Democrat to have any say in my government is not a correct thing to do. Both of the parties are very corrupt. So you're telling me I have to take an allegiance to a corrupt organization in order to participate in my government, and that's not correct. Personally, as I have suggested many times, political parties are all private entities. They are not public entities. They are private. Privately run and owned.
I agree with everything you're saying, Sally.
And I'm saying outside of it, I believe the Republican Party should go have a convention. If they want to narrow it down to two or three people that they really want to promote to get in there for their stuff, okay, put them out there. Then you have a general primary where the best of maybe the five top candidates go to the general. Nobody should be elected in a primary. Nobody. When you're doing that, when you're determined to do, when you're going to allow people to be elected in the primary, you're openly saying, you know what, if you believe in one of these other third parties, or you happen to not believe in any of the parties because they're corrupt, which is in my own case, then you're not worthy of participating in our elections. You really got that.
I agree that everything you're saying is a problem. I agree with that. I'm just not sure what the solution is.
Yeah, but the solution is what the Constitution says. The solution is what does the Constitution say? There is no political parties. There's no electoral college. You just everybody gets in the primaries, and then whoever gets thinned out, then we have the next election.
So, again, this is just to kind of clarify my statement here, and we'll go around the table because I know everybody's got somewhat of an opinion here. And thank you, Mike, for listening, because I think this is a very key topic. As a closed primary, the private entity goes and has their own primary. You can go, the Republicans and Democrats, go have your own convention. I don't care. Have your own closed primary outside of the public ballot. That's where the question is. The ballot that they are taking over my ballot, the people's ballot, for their own personal use, and that's the part that's wrong here. This is where that is, to me, the unconstitutional.
So basically, you're saying, get the supervisor of elections out of it, right?
Yes.
So get the supervisor of elections out of it. The Republican Party of Florida and the Democrat Party of Florida, they should just run their own primaries.
Yes.
Exactly. They're private entities. Go have your own party. I don't care. Go have your own party. Go pick
out.
That
works for me.
You might want two or three people on the ballot. I don't care. You go do your own thing.
Yeah.
But don't take over my public ballot.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, actually.
Open primaries is the law of the land.
Yeah, well, we're not supposed to be denied the right to vote, and that's the other piece of this.
No,
so,
I agree with that. I do agree with that.
Yeah, so, Joe, did you want to add a quick comment onto that? And I'll go around the table on that, then we can move on to some other topics.
Well, I'm a little confused here. Do we want to open primaries or close primaries? Can an unaffiliated voter vote in a Republican primary?
Well, and what I'm saying is...
The supervisor of elections is running it. I personally am not in favor of open primaries, and I would suggest that you would think with the number of NPAs that somebody should be able to organize these NPAs and create a competitive third party, okay, or fourth party or fifth party, but that just doesn't seem. You know, I've been on calls many times with the chairman of the Republican Party of Florida on the phone talking about third parties, okay. And I'm really surprised that nobody has been able to put together a third party that's competitive. But up until this conversation, actually, I've just never been open to open primaries. You know, at this point where we're at right now, I'm opposed to open primaries. That's just where I'm at.
Okay.
I mean, maybe inconsistent with other people on the call, but at least I have the guts to tell you.
And that's fine. What I would say, I'm going to comment here on the Florida thing, then I do want to go around the table so everybody can comment. Florida, if you go to the State Department's website, the Department of Elections, whatever, you go out there and they say, here's the two primary parties, the Democrats, Republicans, here's all the other, because Florida has somewhere around 12 political parties. We had somebody running for president on the Constitution Party, I don't know, two elections ago, whatever. And because of the games that the Republican Party and the Democrat Party, they did everything they could to block the third party. There was a constitution, and I don't think Dr. Talbert's on here listening, but we knew the person who was running, and we were actually supporting this constitutional candidate, but they played games and manipulated. Oh, wait a minute. Well, you needed to have this percentage of voters, whatever it was, in order to get on the primary. Right before the primary, they changed the rules so they couldn't put them on there.
Yeah.
This is the garbage that goes on by the political parties. They can have their own closed primary out of the public ballot. There should be no private closed primaries on the public ballot. That's the real key here.
I'm good with that.
In my opinion. Nathan, you want to go ahead and chime in quickly?
And this is why I say we go back to the instruction manual, and there is no closed primaries and there's no political parties in the Constitution. It repeats this throughout the all four documents, preamble, U.S. Constitution, Bill of Rights, and Amendments. We vote for not electoral college or a party electoral college. We vote for the electors, the citizens vote for their citizen peers to be electors. Go look at Federalist Paper 68 and Anti-Federalist 68, both admits this, okay? But there is no political parties. We have the right to vote in any primary, okay. Shall not be denied by the United States or any other state or for any poll tax or any other tax. A tax is a condition.
Yep. Okay. Mike, any comment on that before we go to Joe?
Yeah, it's interesting to have this conversation. I'll certainly look a little deeper into this subject. But look, I agree that the political parties are corrupt. I totally agree that that we don't get the representation that we deserve when we have to, when basically the parties really cherry pick their candidates. I mean, I totally agree with that. I'm open to ideas on how to correct this situation. You guys, I'm open to, other ideas. I'm not in love with the Republican Party of Florida. I've challenged the Republican Party of Florida more than almost anybody else in the state, okay? Because I get up in there, I actually challenge them in their own quarterly meetings, which I'm famous for that. So I'm not a lover of the Republican Party of Florida in its current state the Democrat Party. I just folks like you who have who have other information, specific knowledge about this particular subject, I'm certainly open to alternatives,
Okay. Well, we will definitely continue this conversation beyond tonight's show. But Joe, did you want to comment, and then Karen?
I'll just leave it at that. It's fine for now.
Okay. So I'll make one quick comment since Joe's not going to. Trump was frustrated, or is frustrated, up in New Hampshire because of the open primary, because the NPAs do have a chance to vote. I'm not sure whether the Democrats are allowed to vote into that other side. That part, mixing, if you go and make a decision to be part of those two parties and you try to go into the other primary one, that part is a little bit fishy, and I can understand why you'd be concerned, because now the party could go in there and play games. But the NPAs should be a very open, a large group of people that you should engage, because they truly are the open-minded thinking people who are listening to more stuff compared to some of the political parties. Karen, I'm sure you have an opinion on this.
Well, I would like to see a lot of parties, and I think each party should run exactly. I think each party should run their own primary. And the problem, again, it really doesn't matter about the parties. If we don't vet the candidates, it doesn't make any difference. And that's, even putting out candidates with no party affiliation, let them not have any party affiliation. Who cares about their party affiliation? I care what they're going to do. I care what they're going to say, and I care who they're going to represent, and I care about what their solutions are for the mess that we're in. So, I wish we had multiple parties. I think the idea of just two parties is horrific, because I agree with Mike, they are awful, and they deserve to be called out, and I call them out all the time also, even though I have to be a member of them, because I can't call them out if I'm not a member. So that's the other side of the problem. Unfortunately, we have to deal with the hand we're dealt with and play with the players that are on the table right now until we get to the spot where we can change it. And unless we get the right people in office, it's not going to change. So I go back to originally it's our fault, and if we don't have oversight and get the right people in office, then we're going to continue to have the same conversation. It's up to us. We're
I'm pretty
charge.
Strongly aligned with Karen's point of view. Very well said, Karen. Thank you very much.
It's a you think of how
here.
What's that?
No, I said on that subject, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, on that subject, I'm agreeing.
The elections are fundamental to who we are, but yet we've gone out there and demeaned them in so many ways and destroyed them. Do we have the representation of our choice is what I would say, and I would dare say no. Which
I have a comment.
We were going to get into the Trump discussion. That'd be a whole other thing of what's happening about the people's choice. Mike, go ahead. Is there we can go around with some other questions. I'm going to let you tell me if we've driven you crazy.
We're now at the phase of the interview that, you know, where we are getting into some situations where, but anyway, it's all good. I'm happy to hear all of it, but I'm just, you know, in the beginning, I felt pretty comfortable that I was on solid ground with everything that I had to say. This particular conversation, like, for example, I'm not interested in doing away with the Electoral College at all, but I could do away with the political parties. That'd be fine. You know what I mean? But I'm not willing to give up the Electoral College at this point.
I got a question. If you're going to make an oath to the Constitution, are you saying you believe in the Electoral College? If it ain't in the Constitution,
I'm going to reread my Constitution again because I believe the Constitution does address it.
No, that's fine.
So, look, I'm going to support the Constitution as it's written.
Okay. So, I'm going to say one thing very quickly, and then I'm going to go to Cindy here. The words. Electoral College do not appear in the Constitution. The words, the Bill of Rights, do not appear in the Constitution. We have 10, the first 10 amendments are the Bill of Rights. The Electoral College represents the electors who've cast the votes on behalf of the presidency. That is part of the Constitution. So I don't care what you call it. Nathan, please don't talk about Electoral College anymore because we've already gone through this. There are electors. The process that I would like for Mike to investigate is how Florida controls who those electors are. Do I get to participate in selecting the elector for the president?
Right
now, I would say no.
That's right, yeah.
So that's what I'm going to ask Mike.
Exactly.
So please don't say electoral.
Okay, so I've been through that a couple of times. I've been through that a couple of times with the Republican Party of Florida, and obviously the party is specifically choosing who those electors are. I mean, we have interviews in every congressional district in Florida, every presidential election cycle, and the parties interview prospects, and then the party decides who those electors are going to be. And based on everything that we've said about political parties here, obviously, that's not a good idea because we can upend let's assume that we could – you know, find common ground around the idea that the voters, let's assume that the voters do send their message to the electors about, who they want to be the nominee from the party. The party selects the electors, and the electors can go and just completely overturn, walk all over the will of the people, should they choose to do that. And that can be very damaging. So I'm very concerned about that. And I think everybody, based on what I'm hearing from what everybody else has to say, I would be surprised if anybody else on the call doesn't feel the same way. Because, again, I've been involved in that process.
We're going to let Cindy speak. She's been waiting. Cindy?
Yep.
Okay. First, I want to clear up one thing. Alan West, I know very well. Alan West was in Broward County, and John Boehner hated his guts and redistricted him, and he ended up coming to our district, Martin County, part of Port St. Lucie. Port St. Lucie is corrupt, and there was voter fraud there, and that's what happened. And that's why he ended up moving to Texas, because he said he was cheated out of the election, and I agree with them. The RPLF hated him. To the other point, yes, they do run candidates. We had ran a candidate here about 10 years ago. They threw in this guy from Russia out of nowhere, the RPOF. The RPOF is corrupt. Let me state why. The RNC is corrupt. Ron Paul won Maine. Ron Paul won New Hampshire. What happened? At the convention, you can go on and look at it. At the convention, Drunken Boehner, got up there and didn't call it for Paul. The whole delegation walked off. Peter Feeman, and I'm sure you know who he is, he was on the
floor.
And I called him and I said, what the hell? So, yes, the party's corrupt. And I'm going to tell you what I really believe. This is about money. We have to have campaign finance reform. We have the McCain-Feingold bill. We need to say, okay, you're going to run for the Senate. Okay, you get to spend, what are we talking now? $30 million to run candidates for the Senate? I mean, it's out of control. We should not take any special interest money. We need campaign finance reform. And that would clear up the whole situation. And, you know, if you notice, I'm just going to put this out there. The first inkling about donors, we were screaming about donors. We belong to Tea Party Patriots. They have a donor list. We don't know who they are.
Yeah, I get it.
That's the biggest problem. We need to expose the donors. You know what, the Koch brothers, we know about you. We know about the Chamber of Commerce. We didn't know about Rosenthal. We didn't know about Sheldon. These are people that need to be exposed. And once we do that and we have campaign finance reform, and also we have to have term limits. Other than that, everything else is null and void because basically we're not going to fix anything until that happens because money is controlling our country. And it's really sad, yeah. And it makes me ill. And I feel, and I'll say one more thing. I'm going to give an example. Steve Bannon, Breitbart News, was their money came from a father and daughter. I'm trying to think of what their names were. Anyway, they were the ones who backed Andrew Breitbart. There was a falling out in 16. That's why Bannon left, okay? That whole thing. Those people now are funding where? Who are they funding? I still think they're funding Breitbart. I'm not sure who's funding this new news thing that got, you know, started up. But that's another problem. You know, it's like everybody was like all like, you know, oh, we got to support the Heritage Foundation. For years and years and years and years and years, the Heritage Foundation has done nothing for us. We got Obamacare. Tell me anything that they're doing. Now I believe they are, and I do believe that there is between Renew America and Heritage and a lot of other good people in Washington, including Stephen Miller, I think that they're on the right track with Project 2025. You want a job, go to mm-hmm. Project 25, mm-hmm. but also because yeah. they're going to, on day one, have everybody in place and they know where the corruption is. And they're going to try to change it and the policies. Yeah. But you know what? All of this other stuff doesn't mean anything. They ran, remember the Libertarian? We had a Libertarians running in Florida. One of them ran for governor. I keep forgetting his name. I asked Karen, she couldn't remember his name. But they went after him. I mean, that's why I'm not on the Republican Executive Committee. I feel there's no point because, and that's why we mm-hmm. vet the candidates. We sit down in a room. We invite people. We have maybe 8, 9, 12 people at the most. That's the core group. When a candidate comes in, it can sometimes it's 2 hours, back and forth, back and forth. Then after all the vetting is done with all the candidates, we go back into the room. And we listen to the audio, take our notes out, and we go around the table and we endorse a candidate. We ask people to vote for it. We don't ask the main group. That's how we do it. And that's what everybody should be doing. Right. But nobody wants to take the time. And so the Republican Party, we wrote a platform here, a conservative platform in Martin County, the only platform in all of Florida. Did you know that the Republican Party of Florida doesn't even have a platform? What do they stand for? I don't know. So we wrote a county platform.
We just passed a platform in Lake, just so you know.
Yes, I heard that. And now, the purpose that we did it for was for them to use it to vet the candidate. And they refused to do it. Because, like I said and then I'm going to get off my soapbox, cronyism.
Yep.
Yep, exactly. Mike?
Yeah, I agree with all that. I'm the policy chairman for the Republican Executive Committee here, so I was having weekly meetings with my video conferencing meetings with the policy committee all year last year, and we finally took Texas party platform and we revised it to match or to reflect Florida. And eventually, we finally got it passed in November, and I just got done putting together the legislative priorities for the Lake County Republican Executive Committee last week. So that's off tomorrow night, actually. We'll pass those priorities out of Lake County, and we'll distribute our legislative priorities to all the legislators. Of course, we are a little behind the eight ball, right? I mean, the session's already started, but at least, you know, and now as soon as we get done with this, we'll start on 25, and we'll start doing our legislative priorities out of the RECs, out of the Lake County REC. But this is what the Republican Party of Florida needs to do, and we can change the Republican Party of Florida and solve a lot of the problems we're complaining about on this call tonight. You know, because I really believe that's what needs to happen, in my opinion. That's how we take over the Republican Party of Florida. Go ahead.
Excuse me. Regarding the Republican Party of Florida, two parts to it. Many of us, we're talking back in 05. That's back when I was running for Orange County Mayor. Back in 05 was this movement, we're going to go take back the local committees. We're going to get the right people in these Republican executive committees, and we're going to take them back. We're going to clean up the Republican Party of Florida. So I can tell you since 05, we've been trying to do this and with all the different pieces to it. That doesn't happen. But what has happened lately that I think is probably a bigger solution, I think it's called the Republican Assembly. It's another group that's basically being set up to replace it. Don't fund the RNC. Put your money into this. Or personally, I give money directly to the candidates. I don't give it to any of the committees, the parties, because I think they're all corrupt. Mm-hmm. But the whole point is let's replace the Republican Party of Florida. Now the question for you, Mike, are you familiar with the Republican Assembly, if I'm saying that correctly? Would you be in favor of trying to do that, or do you truly, truly think you're going to fix this Republican Party of Florida? Because I personally don't think – I think it's beyond repair, just based on my experience and so far.
I'm actually a member of the Florida Republican Assembly, and the state guy, Lou Marin, I know him well. He was just in Tallahassee with us last week with Defend Florida and the Republican Liberty Caucus also. But I agree with you, Sally, that you know, the best way to do it is fund the candidate directly. I'm all about that. Again, I just told you before that I'm really not big on collectivism at all. I think Bob White does a really good job running the Republican Liberty Caucus, and I think that the Republican Liberty Caucus is a pretty open, transparent organization, best of what I've seen so far. You know, I love Lou Marin because he's doing a lot of great things, but Lou is very controlling over what the Florida I tried to start a chapter of the Florida Republican Assembly in my area and opted to go with the RLC because I just didn't like – and I love Lou, don't get me wrong, but he is controlling. So I didn't feel like he gave me enough latitude to do what I wanted to do in my area, so I preferred the Republican Liberty Caucus over Florida Republican Assembly. And regarding the Republican Party of Florida – you know, this stuff ebbs and flows, okay? So it's very interesting to me that you referenced back in 2005 that you basically had the same plan for the Republican Party of Florida that I have today, and I agree with you that it's hard, and I agree with you that the leadership is what determines how it's actually done. You know, I think that it could get better. And like, for example, when I was serving on the Republican Party of Florida, we improved – the Republican Party of Florida, but as soon as that little faction of us was no longer there, it backslid right back into what it was before. So I understand the struggle, okay? I don't know, I don't know of an alternative to it, right? So until I can see a clear path somewhere else, I'm going to work on reforming the Republican Party of Florida until I see a better way. And nobody seems to be stepping up and building a third party. A competitive third party. So I'm going to play the cards I'm dealt, and I'm going to work through the Republican Party of Florida to the best of my ability. Does that answer the question?
That answers it, and that makes perfectly good sense. Trust me, I hope all the best for trying to clean up that Republican Party of Florida. I just can tell
you
from what I've my experience.
Politics is not new. It's not new, right? Humans struggle over these issues since the beginning of time. So I don't know that this will ever go away, but I do believe that our education system plays a lot into it. We don't educate people about civics and things like that sufficiently at all. The school system is just trashed, in my point of view. So we have a lot of work, you know, as Americans to, you know, reinvigorate this country from a citizen involvement standpoint. And, you know, it's a huge, huge task, but it's life. This is what we have to do in order to deliver for our children and grandchildren a country that is worthy what the founding fathers gave to us. Okay, so it's an ongoing fight. I don't think it'll ever end.
Well, let me ask you that, and get back off of the election process and the political party per se stuff, and get back to some of the very specific things with Florida. Is when it comes to education, I mean, what are you thinking that you need to address? Obviously, we know education is a problem, and you mentioned that a little bit before. But do you have anything specific right now? Is what you do you want to totally get? Personally, I'd like to see public schools closed down and a whole other replacement, because I don't think you can you really clean up the public schools with all the transgender and all this other insanity and whatever the CRT and stuff like that. So, what would you do with school
it's so
or education in Florida?
Yeah, I had a town hall meeting in Leesburg on the 18th, Thursday, this past Thursday, and one of my campaign supporters, and look, I'm talking to career educators, okay, who are on the REC and on my policy committee, and between meetings, I'll talk to these career educators, and I hate to say it out loud, Sally, because I am running for, you know what I mean, to be so fully transparent, but I'm going to say to you right now that I totally agree with you, that I really do not believe that the public school system can be reformed. I really don't, and my theory is, like, I'm a real estate broker, for example. I like to kind of use that as a as an example of how it could work, but imagine, and I'm not into licenses either, you know, business licenses to run, you know, I think all that licensure is overregulation in most cases. But imagine if licensed, let's just say that myself or anybody decided to open up a private school, and your model is that you're going to hire consultants to go into a listing appointment and convince families that they should set up the curriculum for their kids. And then the consultant would assist mom and dad by studying their family background and then asking what are their aspirations for their children in the way of education. And then a consultant would actually assist the family in constructing the curriculum for their kids. And then the consultant would match instructors in the various areas of subject matter with the family, so that the family would be the center, and they would not necessarily go to a bricks and mortar school. Okay, I've got three grandchildren. Believe me, my three grandchildren can navigate the internet better than I can, and they're 10, 8, and 5. Okay, and they can navigate the internet better than I can. So I believe with technology the way it is, that bricks and mortar schools are outdated. You know, I really believe they are. And it's just, I'm not saying that I have proposals that I would propose in the 2025 legislature on abandoning the public school system today, but I would say to you that I'm open to working on that for sure. And if we could do that by 2025, come up with a model. But at the end of the day, it's really not even a government solution. It's a private sector solution. You know, when you look at universal school choice, which we've passed in Florida, all you have to do is, and the Republican Executive Committee in Lake County is calling for full funding of universal school choice. So when you have full funding for universal school choice, anybody can set up a private school and implement the program that I just described to you. And if you can convince moms and dads to enroll their children in your school and use their, you know, their voucher or whatever you want to call it, you know, state funding to pay the school, then you've accomplished it. So it's not even a legislative thing. With universal school choice in place, we can create any private sector school system that we want. And I believe that if you take a look at the enrollment numbers for public schools, enrollment numbers are down. So Floridians are choosing alternatives to the public school system today. So this could just basically just evolve with private sector schools putting together different models for education. You know, the public school system could implode on its own. And I'm happy to hear comments about what I just said.
Well, I'm going to hand this over to Karen, because Karen is definitely our education guru on this call. And
she was a teacher in
New York. Karen. Right.
Yeah, as a former teacher, I happen to agree with you. but we're getting off of the point of what the purpose of a school is. And the problem in the schools could be fixed very simply. It's the curricula and the textbooks. And if you eliminated the curricula and made it into a curricula that taught skills, which is all a school is supposed to do. A kid does not have to be in school for 8 hours. They could be there for 2 or 3 hours. And when I was teaching, I used to find out what each child liked and teach them to read by what they liked. And that's really all you have to do. What is the purpose of the school? To teach them the skill set which will enable them to navigate their life and make good choices. And, of course, we don't do that. So if we were doing that and teaching reading, writing, and math, by the time the kid was in third grade, they would be able to read, write, do basic math. After that, they don't even need school. But because of our technology, they would be able to learn on their own. We don't teach phonics. So the minute you don't teach phonics, you eliminate a whole skill set of reading. We don't teach cursive. Cursive is eye-hand coordination. We don't teach math. Yep. Math is logic, reason, critical thinking. Yep. And once we have eliminated that, which, by the way, they're even trying to eliminate algebra. So there goes all of your problem solving.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Out the window. We're not teaching the right things that are going to produce a student that is capable of learning. If you look at the grades throughout the state of Florida, 87% of the kids graduate. 47% can read on grade level. How are they graduating if they can't read? Because we have lowered the bar. We have lowered everything so low that instead of bringing up the kids, we, of course, have dumbed down, and it's being done on purpose because the globalists believe that dumb people don't require much from their government, so they're happy with crumbs, and this is exactly what we're doing. And if we talk, you know, this is, it is the entire skill set. Like I said, you could stop our kids. I remember when my father was and my grandparents, they had an eighth grade education. They knew more today than the kids that are graduating college.
And you also just summarized that by saying, Karen, that we've politicized the schools. We have politicized the school system. That's really what it is. And you can't depoliticize it.
They have to produce morons. And look at what's running our government. We have things falling off of planes in the sky because the people that are being hired by the FCC have been so dumbed down that they can't figure out that you have to tighten the screw. Give me a break. It's our fault. And again, it's another thing that's our fault by not seeing who are our school boards are being paid off by the publishing companies, the publishers.
Yes, money.
Take a look at them. Is anybody, it's not even so much the money. It's who are the publishers, authors of the books that are being published. So if you take Hoof Mifflin or you take Savage, who are those authors? Those authors are communists. So how can we expect our kids to love America if we're giving them garbage that says, hate America? You know,
it goes right back
again,
to my comment on collectivism, right? When you start looking at the publishers of these school books, just like our elections, just like everything else, we collectivize until two or three companies are running all the school books for the whole state of Florida, you know, and they make massive money off of it, and they exclude other publishers and other authors. So this is where you just have to decouple yourself from this collectivism.
Yes. And that's why the homeschool and the micro schools, I know the Florida Citizens Alliance is doing a project with micro schools, and that's working out very well. And that's what is a micro school?
Well,
it's a co-op of parents that come together, maybe 5 or 10 of them, and one is good in math and one is good in reading, and they help each other. That's what it should be.
But Mike.
They came and presented to our REC. So I'm totally on board with that theory.
Okay, so I guess the question I'll put back out there, okay, you've just been elected, you're sworn in, and by some chance
okay,
you get on
one,
some committee
here's the solution.
For education.
Here's the solution, Sally. Fully fund universal school choice, okay? We'll do that. If we don't do it in 2024, we'll do it in 2025. Fully fund the universal school choice program. And now parents are free to do what they want because they're getting funding from the state. Right?
Yeah. Yes. But
the reason that universal school choice, it's not fully funded.
Yep. Yeah.
No. We had a scholarship in that was put in place with Richard Corcoran called the Hope Scholarship. If a child mm-hmm. was bullied or being taught something that the parent didn't like, the parent could pull the kid out of school, get a Hope Scholarship, and then put them in the school of their choice. You know what the legislators are trying to do right now? Eliminate the Hope Scholarship. So this is what we
can't
what we're facing with our legislature. And
right.
this is, you know, we had something that works, and now they're shutting
mm-hmm.
it down. So,
exactly.
And so the handwriting is on the wall.
Why is that, Karen?
Because they're afraid. Because they're afraid.
Well, they don't want to argue with the school lobby.
Hold on, Karen.
Yeah, I was just going to say they're not interested in talking to the unions or the associations or the textbook corporations. And the school, like you said, the school attendance is down. The public schools are paid on attendance. So
That becomes
the major issue. If the attendance
right.
is down, the public schools are losing money. And that's
exactly.
that's the way to stop the public schools. If enough
sure,
people,
I couldn't agree more.
Probably, you only
yeah.
need like 5 or 6% pull their kids out of public schools, and the public schools have no money, then they'll start listening.
I totally agree. But the fact of the matter is once that train starts moving in that direction, we cannot allow it to revert back because I never want to trust them again. It's too valuable.
No,
the minds of our
yes.
children are too yes. valuable to trust to a collective like the public school system. So I think innovation comes from free thought, from, the more individual thought is the more innovation we're going to get. So I really like my concept. Of course, it's my concept, so I like it, right? But I really believe that if families just had a consultant, you know, that they could talk to and that would arrange all the curriculum, all the teachers, all the formatting. I mean, it could be as detailed as taking your kids to their football practice and to their gymnastics and dance practice, you know? I mean, it could be so that the private schools can build out a menu of services that is as elaborate as the family's willing to pay for. And it should be subsidized. I mean, obviously, we agree in America that our kids, you know, that education is a foundational value that we all agree on in America. So I'm in favor, of course, of government funding of education, obviously at some level. But I really believe that the nuclear family is the key to it. And I will also add to the conversation that when families choose their curriculum, parents are going to be more involved in their children's education. And that's a huge piece of the puzzle. And I believe Karen will probably yes. agree with me on that.
Yes, yes. Yes,
yes.
When I was teaching, parent involvement was of utmost importance. And
right.
I used to have call the parents and have them come in and sit.
Yeah.
I used to tell the kids, it's not my job to discipline you. I'll have your mother come in and sit with you, and she can handle your discipline. It's my job to teach you. And you do that a couple of times, and all of a sudden the kids were good. There are so many things that we have taken away from the teachers so that they become
right.
yeah.
monitors. They're not teaching anything, and those that are, most of them can't read, write, and do math. And that's the worst.
Okay, and with that being said,
yeah, exactly. Here we go.
With that being said, we've got right about 8 minutes left here, so we're going to wrap it up. I'm going to give Mike some time to put any final closing remarks. But the only thing I will add to the education thing, education turned out to be a daycare center, not an education center, and that was a big part of the problem too. So people push the kids out the door. I got to go to work, so you go to school.
Yep. Exactly.
So anyway,
that's just a function of the politicization of the school. So, yeah, I mean, for me personally, you know, I'm somebody who I've been self-employed most of my life. I don't like corporate. I worked for corporate America. I made a living at it. I mean, it was good. I mean, I checked the boxes. But eventually, when I was 30 years old, I didn't feel like my bosses were treating me with respect. So I opened my own business, which is what I agreed to. When I was in high school, the ultimate goal of an American was to be self-employed. So I embraced it in my late 20s and early 30s, and I opened my own business. I've been self-employed ever since. So I'm just totally anti-collectivism, you know. I don't like bureaucracies at all. I think bureaucracies always, again, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that's what we're seeing everywhere. So as soon as you start collecting people into batches, whether it's the Chamber of Commerce, your trade association, your school district, whatever it is, it ultimately becomes corrupted. So, Americans and Floridians need to learn and embrace standing on their own two feet, and we've got to simplify the economy so it's easy for people to make a living, easy for people to pay the bills, and, the more government gets involved in things, the more screwed up everything gets, right? So, again, you can just take a look at the housing situation. We're subsidizing housing in an undersupplied market and then subsidizing low-income developers to build low-income housing. I mean, the taxpayers paying on both sides of the equation, it's horrible what's going on. So for me, I'm going to fight against that all the time. And it's just who I am. I've always been this way. The realtors hate me. I'm a realtor, but they hate me. The constitutional officers in Lake County hate me because I don't want them to have fiefdoms where they can just compact their budgets and spend their money any way they want. So I'm a voice against collectivism in almost every practical way. Okay, so that's who I am, and that's what I'm going to bring to the Florida legislature. We are going to have these conversations. I will write it down because what's written down does in fact come to pass, and it's very difficult for people to ignore truthful, logical arguments. And to the best of my ability, I will bring truthful, logical arguments to the Florida legislature. And that's where we are on every issue that comes up. You know, some of the issues we know, some of the issues we don't. But I'm going to personally address them with those premises in mind. And I'll just close with that.
Well, thank you so much. I definitely appreciate that. We're watching. We're going to be watching you. We're going to do what we can. At least I don't endorse anybody. That's just part of the, I don't do that kind of stuff. But I like a lot of what I've heard. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about political parties on another day. You
and
can go
fine.
And listen.
Again,
everybody can go back a couple of weeks and listen to the conversation, the constitutional election process. But you got to go with the Constitution and the state. There's two pieces to it. But excellent information. I really do appreciate you spending this kind of time this is the conversation we need to have with people running for office. We need to know who they truly are, what they stand for,
right,
and how we can support
exactly
those that are going to get rid of the uniparty. We've got to get rid of the Rhino uniparty,
exactly,
anti-Americans,
yeah,
out
totally
of public
agree
office. So,
right. And I just want to tell you that none of us can do this by ourselves. You know, we need input from each other. You know, I mean, I'm very happy to, we need to keep this conversation going. And we need to, again, we have organizations, we have the REC, we have the Florida Republican Assembly, Republican Liberty Caucus, and so many other organizations. And, we need to inspire each other with these thought processes, right? Some the things that we can agree on, we need to implement, right? Because I don't have all the answers. I don't know everything about everything, but I'm very happy to listen to what you have to say. And everybody on the call has chimed in and given us their opinions and things like that. And it's all constructive, so we just build on that knowledge base and get good things done in the legislature. So when I go into the legislature, I'm going to rely on you and others, to just stimulate that innovative process that will improve quality of life for every Floridian. And that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, and Cindy mentioned this a little bit earlier, and I think she had to drop off, but the other piece is getting everybody engaged to understand what their role in this process is, because through public education, as an example, you say, oh, you go vote for somebody, then that's it, and then they take care of everything. They do – well, no, you're supposed to be much more engaged. We need to push that, and I'm hoping that the people – as we get some true Americans in there, America First and Make America Great Again candidates in there, that they're going to remember – We need you. This is about you. This isn't about me, the representative. This is about you, and you need to communicate. And because I see this is a little bit of a bone to pick. We'll have a delegation meeting. You'll go there. You'll get some information. They'll listen, but then you feel like as soon as you walk out the door, anything you said went to the shredder and whatever else, and half the time you don't get any follow-up. And I want somebody who's actually going to represent me, and I want state sovereignty. And, of course, I took a little bit of your time there. But go ahead and finish your last comment, and we are down to like 2 minutes.
I'm done.
Okay.
I think we pretty much covered it.
Thank you so much.
If there's any other questions.
Mm-hmm. Your website?
Yeah, Mike Levine, F-O-R, Florida, all spelled out, .com. Mike Levine for Florida, all spelled out, .com.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking this time. And I hopefully everybody's enjoyed the conversation. I want this type of open conversation with candidates so we can get to really know who they are and who we're voting for. So
I really appreciate
and everyone
the
else
to participate. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We will be here next week, same time, same place. Please be good to each other. Please be engaged. Learn what's going on. It's truly up to us. It is up to we, the people, to save this country. Congress isn't going to do it. We have to get the right people in there, and then we have to work with them. And with that to being said, good night, everyone, and God bless America.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you so much.
God bless America. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.